go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A number of things well suited to our conversation this evening. I would like to start, however, if you do not mind, with a little something close to home. A story of courage. A story of inspiration. A story of motivation. Heroism. Commitment. Understanding of what is at stake. A story of walking the walk as well as talking the talk. It happened in the Coal River Valley this morning. Young people, aware of and tired of and sick of the miserable job that the generations ahead of them are doing in poisoning their future, did something incredibly brave. Let me refer to the words of our good friend Jeff Biggers, who does words so much better than so many of us do. This posted today at Huffington Post under the Green tab. If you are not familiar with Jeff Biggers' work, you need to familiarize yourself with it, because no one is doing a better job right now of highlighting what's going on here in what we call our home country, Appalachia, than what Jeff Biggers is doing. And he posts on the vast majority of it at Huffington Post. He writes this morning, four daring protesters accomplished something today that no high-ranking member in the Obama administration involved in the recent mountaintop removal mining policy decisions has ever bothered to do. These four American patriots made an actual visit to a mountaintop removal site. Jeff Biggers notes they also went beyond the call of duty. Imagine, do you know what a dragline is? A dragline is a monumental piece of earth-moving equipment tailored to the needs of the mountaintop removal industry. It is huge beyond, quite possibly, beyond your conception of huge. So Jeff Biggers writes, scaling a towering 20-story dragline, those behemoth strip mining machines that could rip up a Manhattan block in a New York minute, he's not kidding, and then unfolding a 15-foot by 150-foot banner at the Twilight Mountaintop Removal Strip Mine Complex in Boone County, West Virginia, they also unveiled a simple message on how the EPA the Department of Interior, and the Council on Environmental Quality can best enforce the Clean Water Act and other environmental laws. Just stop mountaintop removal. That's right. Four young people scaled a 20-story steel frame mast to unfurl this banner. It took no small amount of courage. This act kicks off a series of protests at mountaintop removal sites here in Appalachia in West Virginia's coal fields that will go through June the 23rd. June the 23rd, I will be there. Many of us will be there. NASA climate scientist James Hansen will be there. Daryl Hannah, the actress, will be there. 94-year-old former U.S. Congressman Ken Heckler will be there. And we will all be there for one purpose. To make it clear that mountaintop removal must end. If you want to go to the Huffington Post article, I'm going to post the URL to it in the chat room right now. But if you're not in the chat room or can't get to the chat room, HuffingtonPost.com, Jeff-Biggers, B-I-G-G-E-R-S, or just go to HuffingtonPost.com and click on green. You'll see Jeff's post right away. At the inside Jeff's article, you can see aerial photographs of the mine. It's not a mine, it's a demolition site where this protest took place today. It's another little slice of hell on earth. A man-made nightmare. Not fit for human occupation. I have to say I'm proud, very, very proud, of the 14 individuals who put their reputations and their well-being on the line. One of those people was Charles Suggs. He's 25 years old. He presently lives at Rock Creek. He said, "I've written letters. I've attended hearings. I've called my congressman. So far, they have done nothing to stop the disastrous and unnecessary practice of mountaintop removal. It has come to the point when we must take direct action to abolish this practice that is immorally robbing Appalachian communities of their culture, their health, and their future." So says 25-year-old Charles Suggs. So say I. So I hope say we all. This was real bravery today. No, it took more courage than I've got to climb that boom. I get a lot, funny for a guy who lives in the mountains to say it, but I get a little acrophobic. I really do. But what took more bravery was what happened shortly thereafter. The 10 protesters on the ground were arrested, taken to the Boone County jail, processed. I hope they have since been released. But with the four on the boom, let me tell you what the workers for Massey Energy came and did. They went up to that drag line, the Massey workers did. They like to call themselves miners, but we know better. They are demolition workers, excavator operators. My father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather, uncles, cousins, they were miners. They took risks in going beneath the earth to pull coal out of it. They took risks upon themselves and isolated it to their families. Mountain removers subject entire communities to the risks and bear very few themselves. These are not miners. But the demolition workers at this Massey mine site, once the young protesters were at the boom, you know what they did? They all went to the drag line and began to try to shake the protesters off the boom. At 200 feet in the air, 20 stories, Massey workers tried to shake the protesters off the boom. I guess they were just trying to drum up a little more business, you know, because coal keeps the lights on in West Virginia funeral homes. Now, the protesters, understanding and fully cognizant of what they were doing in the terms and conditions of the civil disobedience into which they had entered, knew they faced arrest. I don't know how many of them knew that they faced attempted murder. The protesters have been charged with trespass, I'm certain by now. None of those demolition workers, however, have been charged with attempted murder. But that is precisely what they did. To give you an idea of how the for-profit media operate in this resource colony that's not quite a part of the United States, because no American citizen would have done to them what is done to West Virginians and Appalachians in general. Standing around, just standing around, one Massey worker got a little faint in the heat and sat down and passed out or some such. The headline immediately went all over the state. Massey worker injured during protests. Well, no, the protest didn't injure the Massey worker. If anything injured the Massey worker, It was probably those three or four Egg McMuffins he had on the way to work that morning. Meanwhile, not a word about Massey workers trying to kill the protesters. That is the world in which we live in Appalachia. Peaceful, nonviolent protesters subjected to attempts on their lives. All this made necessary, the protest, by the fact that we have not yet manifested quite enough national will to eliminate the need we feel for electricity based on coal removed from mountains by removing the mountains themselves. £3 million of high explosives per day on West Virginia alone. A Hiroshima's worth of high explosives roughly every 9 days on one state in your country. Just imagine. You see, the Obama administration still thinks that it can operate by half measures. The head of the Council on Environmental Quality is Nancy Sutley, and she said last week that the Obama administration would do, and this is a quote, all it can under existing laws and regulations to curb the most environmentally destructive impacts of mountaintop coal mining. Ms. Sutley, with all due respect, it ain't mining. And again, with all due respect, if you're only curbing what you deem the most environmentally destructive impacts, well, let's put it this way, you can't do that. Because there aren't any impacts of mountaintop removal that are not most environmentally destructive. There is no such thing as a responsible mountaintop removal mine site. There is no such thing as responsible mountaintop removal. Not one, not anywhere, at all. Responsible mountaintop removal is oxymoronic. Emphasis on the moronic. So I have to take my hat off this afternoon, this early evening, to brave young men and women in the Coal River Valley who showed more courage than anyone in the Congress. So that's a starting place for this evening. Inspiration and courage. You know, if we got that kind of inspiration and courage around health care, around the Employee Free Choice Act, I don't think the conservatives and the repig lickens would have a prayer. And maybe that momentum will grow and we will see that kind of courage. And by the way, if you are listening to this program following Mike Malloy's show this evening in its recorded form, welcome. I hope you will find yourself at home, and I hope you will feel comfortable contributing to the ideas, contributing to the discussion, the dialogue, the conversation. Jump right in, as we say. The conversation's fine. If you want to reach the program, let me let you know how we do that. The toll-free number is 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366. How to remember that? It's 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, and you've got your own long-distance dialing plan that will not cripple you in the process, you can dial direct to the studio ordinary-wise at 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. Too nervous to get on the phone? Email works, too. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. BobKincaid@gmail.com. With regard to last night's show, I awoke this morning to an excellent email sent along by Michael. He said, I finally found my way to the correct email address to send you my reaction to the dispatch audio you played in the beginning of the show last night. I heard you mention the email address on air, but being a first-time listener, I didn't know the spelling. I was turned onto your show by Mike Malloy today, and I'm glad I followed his advice. I'm already hooked. Okay, here's what I wrote right after I'd finished listening to the audio you played. And this relates to the audio from last night, the dispatch audio, 911 call. Tragically, the story having been orphaned by the for-profit media. Michael says, my heart has never beaten so fast and hard listening to any audio. I have never stared with more shock and horror at my Winamp player. What you just played on your broadcast, the dispatch call of a woman whose family had been gunned down in cold blood, is some of the most scary one of the most scary pieces of media I've ever heard. You did right in playing it in its entirety, shock value or not. This is important, if not for any other reason than to illustrate the horror of true real-life evil brought on by thoroughly deluded and frankly insane humans who proclaim to fight evil themselves. The irony of that is nothing less than horribly bloody. I hope the perpetrators will be forced to listen to this tape in its entirety over and over again till the truth of what they did sinks in. I do not support capital punishment, but in this case I would almost give these twisted people the option of suicide, though I would prefer them to rot in jail with the notion of what they did kept fresh in their memories. My heart goes out to the woman whose life was torn apart by these right-wingers' insanity. And that's from our new friend Michael. And anytime you feel the urge, fire up that email address and let me know what you're thinking. You are always welcome here at the Horn, and your thoughts are welcome as well. So that's where we begin. Where we will go through the rest of the evening. A little Supreme Court decision came down today. I'm sorry, I guess it's in the nature of the program, but I think you will be nauseated by that. I don't mean to nauseate, but if you have any regard for the Constitution and any regard for the guarantees enshrined in the Bill of Rights, the latest work by the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, with a little bit of help from Anthony Kennedy. The latest piece of work by the rats will make your skin crawl. It seems as though the rats on the Supreme Court are hell-bent on transforming these United States into some sort of Kafka-esque nightmare. And the sad fact is, they're succeeding. So I hope we will get into that here in a little bit. I do hate to keep people waiting, however. Let's get the conversation started. Kevin is joining us from New York. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I'm walking home. I'm cutting through Central Park to get to the subway, but I had to call in. I want to divide my call into two topics. First, tonight's issue, but that recording that you played. And all I have to comment is, this is why, and someone who was very close to me, my former significant other, her parting shot was, I chose to move back to the ghetto. The so-called ghetto. It's because, at least in the ghetto, there's a rhyme or reason to the crime. And in short, you mess with my money, there's going to be hell to pay.
There's a ghetto in Brooklyn?
Oh, there are plenty of ghettos in Brooklyn.
I just have this monolithic vision of Brooklyn, but, you know, you'll pardon my provincialism.
Yeah, there are plenty of ghettos in Brooklyn. There are also plenty of trees in Brooklyn, believe it or not.
Well, you know, there's a book about that.
Yeah. But this... One thing you can say about, you know, what the media hype as South Central or Detroit or, you know, the South Bronx and all that, they talk about all this crime, but there's a logic to the crime. Somebody was screwed out of their money.
Yeah, or somebody was romping with somebody else, you know, crime of passion, sure.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not that hard to find a reason, is I think what you're getting at.
Exactly. You know, back in the ugly 80s and 90s when we had the so-called crack epidemic, you know, stuff would happen, let's say, a block away, a couple of hundred feet, and it would be a different universe because that wasn't my universe. And as long as I didn't mess with them, they didn't mess with me. okay?
Right.
And it was about, and that was, and it's pretty much like, and that's the way, you know, crime in New York City tends to operate. If you don't go into their world, pretty much nothing is going to happen to you. But this right wing, you can choose to stay out of their world, and they're going to try their damnedest to drag you in.
Well, exactly. And, Kevin, what you've touched on there is exactly why this is different from what we ordinarily think of as crime in America. Crimes have motives that are, as you've noted, generally related fairly closely to the act itself.
Yeah.
Somebody romping with somebody else's wife, or somebody's wife romping with somebody else's husband, angry spouse comes in, oh, ask them, and, you know, crime. Or, you know, you messed with my money, you messed with my people, you messed with my stuff.
Yeah.
Crime. This is not that, Kevin.
This is terror.
This is terrorism. And the very nature of terrorism, as we've seen in the rest of the world, is to strike at places that are seemingly safe. Pizza parlors, delis, somebody in their home at midnight, and the right-wingers come bursting through and murder a father and his 10-year-old daughter in front of their mother, who has to pretend that she is dead in order to survive. That's the epitome of terrorism, is it not?
And what, because they didn't go to their church or have a different political...
No, because they were perceived to be... I don't know, the illegals, as they like to call them, undocumented immigrants.
Oh, God.
But these people were not, they weren't even that. As if, God, shame on me, as if being an undocumented immigrant would somehow explain these murderers' actions. That's the whole point. They don't care, Kevin. They're here to kill.
Yeah.
And they're here to act on the marching orders that are doled out and dished out by that life support system for a haircut, Hannity. That are dished out by the falafel rapist O'Reilly, the junkie Limbaugh, the draft dodging closet case Wiener. They're acting on orders.
Yeah, and God knows what they're told in the pulpits too.
Well, don't forget, right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. You're just acknowledging what I said. Because I tell you this, as disgusted as I am by those individuals, what they get fed on Sunday morning is a lot worse.
In many senses, it is. I'm still horrified by the upcoming Bring Your Gun to Church Day at the New Bethel Church in Lord Only Knows Kentucky.
Yeah.
All you got to bring is a friend with another gun strapped on them and a can of food for the food bank. Hallelujah, praise Jesus, and pass the ammunition.
Yeah, oh my God. You know, and like I said, you know, in the so-called ghetto, which I told I was moving back to, at least there's a lot of rhyme or reason, which I can somewhat understand. And as long as I stay out of that world, I'm okay. There are very few real tragedies in the ghetto.
Because most of it is explainable one way or another.
Exactly. You know, they they'll take the classic drive-by and the little girl gets shot, which pretty much rarely happens, but they'll make it seem like as if it happens all the time. Feeding into, you know, suburban America, when really it happens, stuff like that happens more often. You know, how do you explain Columbine and Paducah, Kentucky, and you know, the abortion doctor murders?
Yeah,
the guy in the museum.
Yeah, well, but see, the thing is, all these stories are just down the memory hole.
Yeah.
America doesn't want to know about them. We want to continue our mass hallucination that, you know, that leave it to be, the Ward and June and Wally and the Beeve just live around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the fact of the matter is, in 2009 America, Kevin, if Wally and Ward and June and the Beeve live around the corner, somebody's probably getting sexually abused. Ward's beating June. June's going out on Ward with the preacher down the street. But we can't look at that because we can't. We do not have the national will to confront our demons.
Exactly. So we rather live in a state of blissful ignorance.
Where even the bliss is phony. Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. So,
anyway,
are you saying that, you know, there where you live in Brooklyn, that you feel safe?
Oh, I feel very safe. I've come to the conclusion nothing bad is going to happen to me in my neighborhood. I've really come to that conclusion. You know, and I realized, first of all, most of the so-called troublemakers I kind of went to school with, and they know me. And they know to respect my family, my block, and all that. And it's just, most of these gangsters, so-called gangsters around my way, they just want to be treated with respect. If you treat them like a thug, they're going to act like a thug to you. But if you acknowledge their presence and say, how you doing and what's going on, you know, matter of fact, they'll be the ones looking out for you.
Sure. Capone looked out for his neighborhood in Chicago, and Gotti looked out for his in New York.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand that.
And so I pretty much come to that determination. And if something doesn't, you know, I guess God's will.
Don't blame it. Don't blame it on him. He's already got enough with the tornadoes and the hurricanes. And
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
He's working overtime.
Yeah. You know, I've walked around my neighborhood 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Nobody bothers me. And there's literally not a creature staring, not even a mouse.
That's actually kind of inspiring.
I can't say the same. Where I used to live in, you know, Walmart America, where 5 minutes drive from me, there was a huge Klan rally, and they said a couple of tens of thousands of shell casings in the middle of an open field, and it burnt across, which the Central Florida media has kept rather hush hush. You know, and we're talking like a half hour drive from Disney now.
Yeah, without a doubt. The happiest place on earth.
Exactly.
Just not quite. Hey, Kevin, good hearing from you, brother. Enjoy your walk across Central Park. I bet it's a beauty today.
It's raining, but it's still beautiful.
Nah, it's still beautiful, exactly.
I'll talk to you, bro.
All right, take care, man. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Pardon me while I revel in the image of walking across Central Park in the rain, talking to the rest of the world. Dang, ain't that cool? What Kevin brings up, and Michael's email brought up, going back to last night, I want to share something with you, if I may. It is by Sarah Robinson, writing at Orsinus. Am I saying that right? Is it Orkinus? If it was Latin, it would be Orkinus. I know that. Orsinus. Originally published June the 13th. Maybe you've already seen this. It's a letter by Sarah Robinson. She writes, "Dear conservatives, your fellow Americans demand an answer, and we want it now. Just one simple question. Are you deliberately trying to start a civil war? You just answer the question. Yes or no? Don't insult us with elisions, evasions, dithering qualifications, or conditional answers. We need to know what your intentions are, and we need to know now. People are being shot dead in the streets of America at the rate of several per month now. You may not want responsibility for this, but the whackdoodles pulling the triggers make no bones about who put them up to this. You did. The assassins themselves are ratting you out. They're telling us straight up that they were inspired to act by the hate radio talkers that you empowered, one of whom is now the de facto head of the Republican Party. They got it from media outlets owned by your biggest donors. They got it from bloggers who receive daily talking points faxed in from the GOP. They got it from activists representing causes that would have never become causes in the first place if the issues hadn't been politically expedient for you. Beyond that, you've already admitted your own complicity. When the Department of Homeland Security expressed their worries in a report commissioned by the Bush administration, by the way. That's me, not her. When the Department of Homeland Security expressed their worries about right-wing extremist violence last April, practically every conservative pundit in the country went into a righteous fit. DHS never named anyone directly, so it was astonishing how many of you on the right were so quick to step up and claim that that memo was slandering you personally and collectively. Since you were so eager to claim that that memo was all about you, now that the violence has come to pass, we're well justified in holding you to that. And please don't insult our intelligence by saying that these acts are the work of lone wolves, and that you don't have anything to do with this, and that it's all the fault of the left. It's true that there have always been crazies in our midst, but by choosing to gain power through a process of politics that only motivates through hate and fear, you've recruited a good-sized army of those crazies, armed them up, and turned them into paranoid monsters that are now running loose on the American landscape. Now, you know that I kind of differ with this issue of crazies. They're stone sane, brother, sister. They're sane. The killers in Arizona, they're not going to be adjudged incompetent to stand trial or incompetent to be charged. They're sane. These are sane acts, not crazy acts. But anyway, I'm quibbling. She says, now running loose on the American landscape, I might add, running loose, heavily armed on the American landscape. Sarah Robinson continues, we know you have absolute and utter contempt for the intelligence of the average American. But trying to blame the left for creating the situation is a fabrication so vast that it tells us you don't even have so much as a shred of respect for yourselves. Even you seem to know that your word is worth nothing to most Americans now, and you don't seem to care. You don't seem to give a damn about the future of this country either. You're just in it to win the next election, increase profits for the next quarter, or boost your ratings in the next book. As long as selling hate accomplishes any of these goals, you'll do it. Without regard for the cultural sewage you're creating. Without regard for the way you've polluted the political landscape, and now, apparently, without even a moment's regard for the innocent lives that are being lost because you seem bent on destroying every shred of trust required for our democracy to function. But the bodies are piling up. We are demanding an accounting from you. We are demanding that you take responsibility for the situation you've created. We are looking you straight in the eyes and demanding a straight answer. Are you deliberately trying to start a civil war? If your answer is yes, then stop this cowardly half-ass screwing around. You speak the language of war and honor, but the honor code of the warriors you pretend to revere demands that you declare your intentions. If you really believe that the only way to get the America you want is to negate a fair election, shred the Constitution, and violently cleanse the country of everyone who doesn't agree with you, then man up and get on with it! If it's a shooting war you want, no doubt that there are plenty of progressives who will oblige you. If this goal is so important that you're really willing to kill for it, please don't forget that you will also need to be willing to die for it. Because like martyrs Greg McKendry and Stephen Johns proved, we are willing to do whatever is necessary to stop you. If your answer is no, then you have just one other choice. Knock off the tantrums, grow up, rebuild your party, come back to the table, and sit down and govern with us. We know this will be a stretch, but we think some of you are capable of it. You will need to learn, many of you for the first time, to get your way as adults do, without fear-based politics, polarizing rhetoric, on-air threats against those who disagree with you, and repeating outrageous lies in the face of stone facts and irrefutable evidence. And most of all, you need to stop feeding the crazies. You need to disavow them in every way possible, sincerely, emphatically, and with full awareness that every time one of these people acts, it destroys the credibility of conservatives, Republicans, and the right wing in the eyes of the country. You cannot assassinate your way back to power. And don't doubt for a moment that the majority of Americans, even those who agree with your ideas, will abandon your cause forever once it realizes that's what you're trying to do. Since you're the ones funding the violent radicals on your flank, you need to stop sending them money. Since you know far more about their activities than anyone else, you need to be the ones who turn them in. Since you're the ones who make heroes and martyrs out of them, you need to be the ones who call them out as criminals. Until you do this, consistently, wholeheartedly, and responsibly, we can only conclude that these assassins are operating with your support and approval, and that you are intentionally trying to start an armed revolution in America. That's your choice. Are you deliberately trying to start a civil war? Or are you willing to work for real civility and return to your seat at the table, ready to help us choose the country's future? Yes or no? Right now! The window is closing fast behind you, and once it closes, none of us, not you, not us, not anyone, will have the choice to avoid the catastrophe that will follow. It's your decision, and you need to make it now. I don't know who Sarah Robinson is, but I dig her. I respect that. I really, really respect that. I think she and I could probably sit down and have a conversation and work through that crazy part. Because I think in the final analysis, no. I don't even think Sarah Robinson would say, okay, well, no, they're not crazy. I remember long, long ago in school reading some case about a woman who was involved in a car wreck when she tried to jump out. She was driving a car and tried to jump out of it naked, I think. And she explained patiently and seriously to the court that she did it because Batman and Superman could fly, so she thought she could too. See, she wasn't responsible for her actions because her brain had gone bad. But that argument cannot be said for people who write... Was Ted Kaczynski crazy? He's in Florence, Colorado at Supermax. He may get out of his cell for maybe an hour a day. He wasn't deemed crazy. Neither are the right-wingers who have declared war on America. You know the deal. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366. Then 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N. Or 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We've got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And their speech
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June 18, 2009.
Energy legislation fight now moves to the Senate. Climate change outlook now worse than before. Libby, Montana, now a public health emergency. Plus, rocks not.
Oh, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, secretly I'm hoping we don't get to the Rock Snot story, but let's give it a try.
Here's
Desi
Doyen.
All right.
As you know, the Waxman-Markey Climate and Energy Bill is under intense negotiation in committee in the House, and the Senate, meanwhile, has been busy creating its own version, which was voted out of committee yesterday and was immediately panned by environmental groups.
Oh, boy.
The Senate's version reopens offshore drilling near Florida and a renewable energy standard that environmentalists panned as even weaker than the already weak House version.
Now, over in the House, the problem was a bunch of Democrats sort of...
Democrats from farm states and coal states weakening all of the standards in concert with Republicans.
Right, compromising with themselves before the Republicans
even got
their crack at it
to
say it was terrible. So the Senate now is worse in that regard?
Yes, in many regards. The Senate's bill would create also a new clean energy financing agency to help fund projects, including nuclear power plants. 17 of the heaviest hitter environmental and anti-nuclear groups issued a joint statement on Wednesday objecting to the new agency as it stands in the Senate bill. The Senate bill would also make it easier for the U.S. to import oil from the Canadian tar sands, which is an extremely destructive water and energy-intensive process that also happens to generate more greenhouse gases than conventional oil production.
It's also very expensive, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's more expensive per gallon. One good thing in the Senate energy bill is the repeal of, quote, royalty relief for oil and gas companies, which was passed in 2005, which reduced royalties paid by oil and gas companies on American leases right before oil hit record highs.
So are we going to get we're not going to get this legislation. They had wanted it by summer, didn't they?
They had talked about in the House trying to get it on the floor before the July 4th recess, but that has since been pushed back.
Not a chance. July 4th, what year?
Good question. A new report released yesterday by the Obama administration details for the first time the projected impact of global warming on specific regions of the United States and on various aspects of society and the economy, like water, energy, agriculture, and health, if nothing is done to cut greenhouse gas emissions. The report is a joint scientific effort from 13 federal agencies in conjunction with the White House. It's required by law every 10 years. Some of the environmental changes are already happening, the report notes. And they also note that even if action is taken to cut emissions now, some effects will be unavoidable. Now it is just a matter of degree. For example, in the next 90 years, if no action is taken, the expected average temperature in the U.S. will increase from 4 to 11 degrees, depending on region. And that could significantly alter natural ecosystems.
From 4 to 11? Degrees?
Depending on the region. Sea level rise of 3 feet, for example, Key West would be underwater by 2100. We could also expect more intense droughts, less rainfall, which would affect agriculture, water, and energy supplies across the country.
What was it that Senator Inhofe said about this global warming business?
He called it a hoax.
Okay.
Some effects have already occurred. The heaviest rainstorms, for example, have already become 67% heavier since 1958.
Are these the things that cannot be stopped even if we do take action at this point?
In the report, they provide three different levels, low, medium, and high, depending on how many cuts we actually make.
I see.
In a joint report issued this week by the United Nations in conjunction with the International Red Cross, predicted that global warming will cause an increase in mega disasters. And no, they're not talking about that show on the History Channel.
Mega disasters.
They're talking about more frequent and more intense natural disasters.
Godzilla is not involved then.
Definitely not. This is all human caused. The International Red Cross World Disaster Report says climate change is, quote, offering us the ultimate early warning and calls on nations to take steps now to ensure their populations are protected from the negative effects of more frequent and more intense weather-related natural disasters, like more intense storms and storm surges. The report says 9 out of 10 of the last natural disasters were all weather-related and caused extensive economic disruption.
I wish we had more red flags for all of this stuff.
The Environmental Protection Agency took the unusual step yesterday of declaring its first ever public health emergency in a small town in Montana due to asbestos contamination. Libby, Montana was the site of a vermiculite mine closed down years ago that was contaminated with the toxic form of asbestos that mine workers unknowingly carried home on their clothes, sickening their own families. Mm. The rate of deadly lung diseases is unmistakably higher in residents of Libby, and the EPA declaration frees up federal money to help pay directly for their medical care.
And this is the first public health emergency ever by the EPA?
Yes, they've had the right to do so since 1980, but have never used it. Now, this announcement comes 6 weeks after a Montana jury acquitted the mine owner, W.R. Grace, now bankrupt, and three of its executives for withholding information on dangers from the mine.
This is not a very cheery green news report, is
it? No, I'm sorry. But here's something good. A consortium of 20 German companies made up of some of the biggest names in European energy, finance, and manufacturing have announced plans to tap into the vast solar power of the Sahara Desert. The North African desert, if successful, would be selling power to Europe within 10 years. Now, waterways in America also have a new threat. It's called rock snot. That's the nickname for a single-celled algae that's spreading rapidly through New York streams. The algae resembles a tan or gray, slimy carpet, and it seems to have quickly evolved into an invasive species that blankets river bottoms, killing off the food supply for aquatic organisms.
That's bad news, not good news, right?
That's, yeah.
All right, we're out of time. You're going to have to read more about that at greennews.bradblog.com. Sorry, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Indeed you are, and indeed it is. Ongoing thanks to Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen for their Green News Report. Makes Tuesdays and Thursdays really, really special. I look forward to the day when it's Monday through Friday. I love their work. And I heard Malloy say the other night that he and Kathy and Miss Molly are going on vacation next week. So I believe Monday through Friday of next week, you're going to get to hear Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike. And knowing Brad and knowing the quality of his work, I know that he will do a Jim Dandy, Cracker Jack bang-up job. So, you know, just a reminder, gentle listener. And we are going straight back to the phones post-haste, right after a quick trip to the mailbag. One of these days I got to get my catchy mailbag sounder thingy back. Last night, I believe it was Linda called in with some questions about television reception after the switch from analog to digital, and lo and behold, I suggested at that point that I bet I would hear something back, and I have. So I want to make sure that I pass this along. This is from our buddy Tosh. He says, Bob, you must have known this would summon me into engineer mode. I've spent some time dealing with RF, even though it is pretty electronical from my perspective. If no one else has mentioned it, one of the features of the analog-to-digital switch appears to have been cutting broadcast power levels. This was broadcast on our D.C. area local stations as the switchover date approached. There are good, honest technical reasons why this would happen, so don't get too grand scheme at this point, you know, because I'm that way. Think increased profits and bandwidth conservation. Analog TV required a lot of modulation on the carrier to carry the signals needed to define the sound and picture for TV. This means that TV signals had to be relatively high power and broadly spaced in the UHF or VHF bands to accommodate the modulation needs of each channel. A digital signal can carry the same information with a far smaller amount of modulation and power needed. Less power means lower electric bills and higher profits. Oh, look, it's holy profit again. It's always in there somewhere, isn't it? For satellite broadcasts, each satellite broadcast channel includes signals modulated into 16 slots of angular polarity, roughly. We'll take up angular polarity in the next class, I assume. Note this is the size of the typical baseline computer data word. Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. The standard for the RF in these broadcasts is called DVB-S2. These attributes of digital broadcasts mean that channels can be more closely spaced since digital bit streams don't bleed like TV did in some places. Also, with error correction, gaps in the data stream can be covered up until the dropouts get pretty severe. That's just... I knew there would be an answer. I just knew there would be. Thank you, Tosh. So, basically, I guess the short form answer is that with the changeover to digital, power went down and therefore the reach of the signal decreased. I knew there would be, and I knew somebody here would know it. And a new email in from Joe. Hi, I listen to Mike's show nightly, and he directed us to your show. This is my second day, and I'm glad I have someone to listen to in this time slot that doesn't tap dance around issues like Ron Reagan. About me, I'm a starving student trying to support my family. I'm also a 10-year Army vet who served in Iraq and Kosovo. Like most people, I just want to live a peaceful life and help make the world a better place. Unfortunately, the Republicans are making that impossible. What I want to know is, when are liberals going to start fighting back? As a soldier and fairly learned person, I know that if we all work together, we would be unstoppable. Unlike the right wing, we do not need to resort directly to violence and bloodshed. It is time for liberals to go on the offense in this civil Cold War we are in. Thanks. Signed, the Foxhole Atheist. I knew there was one. They say there aren't, but I knew there would be. Atheist in a foxhole, that is. Thank you, Joe, sincerely. And the question you ask is one that it seems to be eternal on this among those of us who are activist-oriented. Trying to get the rest of liberal... Because, you see, liberal America... There were 20 unanswered years of Flush Flemball. My friends, there are no liberals in America. They are a distinct minority. Or give me a little bit of those pills. Oh, there aren't any of them out there. America is a conservative nation, my friends. When's Conchita get back with the next box of pills? Really? And that was echoed by all the other right wing. When you know, we knew where we were and we knew we were here. And so, you know, one of the reasons that I revere Malloy's work is because he has, by God, been there and stayed there and fought it out I mean, Malloy is his own little one-man siege of Bastogne. Right-wing radio grew up in, and he never faltered. He never flagged. And that's why I argue from time to time that everybody doing liberal talk owes an undying debt of gratitude to Mike. Because they do. And now, as there are a few more of us, we're trying to close the gap, close the distance. And I guess in answer to your question, Joe, when are we going to stand up? We're trying to stand up now. And we are standing up in our numbers and hoping that we can get a sort of master class started to teach other, help other people stand up. And the getting other people to stand up part happens in the line at the grocery store, while you're pumping the gas, at the post office, yes, in church. It happens in all of those places. And that is why you see this burgeoning attempt to start a civil war. Because we are standing up. And the only way that the right wing understands to silence us is to kill us. It really is that simple. So the question is eventually put to us. And that is, will we allow ourselves to be terrorized into silence? I don't know about you, but I won't. I can't. I got 6 good reasons, 7 good reasons, 8 good reasons every day that I can't. And I have to look every one of them in the eye. And I cannot shrink from this fight. I cannot and I will not. And I suspect that is the general attitude of the horn as well. Ferg, where's Ben?
Hey there.
Hey, Ben.
You know, years ago, I worked for Zenith, which was the very last American television manufacturer. And even though you see the brand name out there today, it's actually Lucky Gold Star Electronics.
Right, it's owned by LG, right.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't ding LG. Actually, they tried their very darndest to keep us in business, buying more and more and more Zenith stock and pumping more and more money into us to try to keep us afloat, because they really wanted you know, to keep licensing our technology, because they were using our technology to make their picture tubes, and they didn't want us to go away. But you know, what happened was, you know, the Asian economic crisis happened back in 96, 97 there, and even though we were almost to the point of breaking even, almost to the point of making money, the dollar cheapened, and televisions were coming in to the United States, not only cheaper than we could make them, but actually cheaper than the people who were selling them in the U.S. could make them. But they were dumping them. And that was the final straw, and Zenith went under. But Zenith had basically invented the modulation technique for digital television, and had come up with all of the equipment to make digital television work, and we were just waiting for it to be approved, because that was going to make us profitable. But two things happened. Thing number one is they couldn't get off their butts and approve it in the FCC, which is about the worst bureaucracy there's ever been, except for maybe the United States Army. They changed the specification from the way we had it designed. Because what Zenith had was called spectrum-compatible digital television. And that is to say, we had our digital TV signal slightly off the center of the analog television signal that was already there, so that both kinds of sets would work. And there would have been absolutely no problem with the digital television introduction because the old sets would continue to work until there weren't any old sets anymore.
So whose system has this been?
This is the one that was was proposed primarily by Thompson and Scientific Atlanta, and Inspire their name is not an American company, and Sony.
Okay. So did the explanation as given by our buddy Tosh ring true for you?
Yes, and the one thing to note is, though, is where it hurts you is fringe areas. You know, it used to be that if you were sitting out in the hinterlands, pick a place, Carroll, Iowa, and you had a nice big antenna on a mast with a rotator, you could actually get the station in Des Moines. It was fuzzy, it was snowy, but you could watch it. The trouble with digital works perfectly, absolutely flawlessly, zero interference, nothing wrong with it until the very moment when it doesn't work at all. There is no fringe. There is no fringe. You get to a certain point, the signal, you know, has enough errors in it, and the signal is low enough, and you're not going to get anything. You know, there is no capacity for taking a degraded signal. It's just gone. And that's how digital is designed to work, and that's one of the reasons that now, supposedly, although you're never going to see the FCC actually open up licenses, now supposedly you could have lots and lots and lots of little low power digital TV stations serving small communities, which would not interfere with each other in the slightest, even though you know they were all on channel 33. You know you could have somebody in Beckley and then somebody over in Oak Ridge, and they have the exact same channel, but because the power is set right, they'll almost meet in the middle. There'll be like a couple thousand yards where nobody gets anything in between them, and they could just happily coexist without ever interfering with each other.
But all that is by the wayside now because it is what it is, right?
That's right. There are two or three things to understand. Thing number one is rabbit ears are never going to work. The only time your rabbit ears are ever going
to
work...
So you're going to have to spring for the mast and the directional antenna and so forth.
You need something like that because unless you're sitting where you can look up and see the top of the Sears Tower. Okay?
Yeah, or elsewhere, line of sight.
Direct line of sight where you can literally see the mast, your rabbit ears just are not going to have enough gain to get you anything. Okay? And in fact, I can pretty much almost see, I can see the top of the Sears Tower from the top of my house, and I'm not really sure that even then, because it's a sort of a fluke of the terrain that I can see it, that a rabbit ear would even work here with a digital television. And also, a lot of the antennas that are on people's roofs are designed for a specific frequency. They're designed for the original VHF television band, and they are not going to perform well with digital TV at all. And the reason this was actually allowed to slide through, even though it wasn't going to work well for a lot of people who have just the television, is because the people who were pushing it were the very people who also push cable set-top boxes. The whole idea, the entire idea, is that you have got now to get a cable system. There is just really not any chance that you are going to get good results with your old equipment. You're not going to want to upgrade the equipment, and so you're going to pick up the phone and you're going to call Comcast. And you're going to say, I want cable television. I want digital TV. And they'll happily sell it to you, and they'll bring in a box made by Scientific Atlanta or Thompson or Sony.
Oh, my God, it's this way of the egress with television.
Yeah. Broadcast television is essentially dead, and digital TV killed it. And, it is increasingly marginalized to the point where in some communities 10-15% of people take over the air only. And as of, last few weeks, probably most of them aren't watching television.
Kind of sad, really, because, I started in radio. Because I've got a face made for TV, Ben. You know that. I mean, I've got a face made for radio. Sorry, ruined the joke. Damn it.
Yeah, fine. Understand.
Yeah, I've got a face made for radio, so that's where I started. But I have this egalitarian fascination and adoration of the idea of public airwaves. And what you've just described basically puts paid to the video end of that.
Yeah, it is no longer a major force, and it never will be again. And the only reason television stations persist in broadcasting over the air is because the way the laws are structured, if you have a signal over the air and there's a cable television system that is theoretically in reach of your signal, they have got to carry you.
Yeah.
It's how the television stations get access to cable, is that they continue to pip out that digital signal. And it was never supposed to be this way.
But FM quad was never supposed to be this way. Yeah, what FM quad? AM stereo. I remember when cars were sold with AM stereo, and the few stations there were that broadcast in AM stereo sounded really good.
Oh, yeah, I remember, too. WLS here in Chicago.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's just now a right-wing mouthpiece.
Yeah, sure.
Thing.
Megaphone. Right.
Yep.
At the center of this, once again, the worship of Holy Prophet, Ben.
Yep.
Because the fights between the turf wars between the various and competing corporations to be the broadcast standard. I mean, if you think about it from an engineering perspective, and Tosh will probably chime in on this by tomorrow night, isn't that just ass backwards? Where
you should pick the best possible system and then tell everyone to go implement it.
Right. But what we've got here is the FCC saying we want to do X. Now everybody come up with your own way of doing it, and we'll fight it out for 20 years.
Right.
And then we'll get it wrong.
Correct.
When in fact the function of government should be to say, we are going to have a broadcast standard that employs criteria A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And then the public funds the research into how to do it, and we license out the creation of the technology and the hardware behind the to support the technology to the various and sundry corporations who can profit to their little heart's content.
Well, that's what the BBC did, but of course that's socialism.
Oh, damn. Confounded! My socialism detector's apparently on the fritz. I think it was manufactured by Scientific Atlanta.
The concept Zenith had for how to make money on all this was, instead of making all the old analog boxes stop working, was to mandate that any television bigger than a certain size and more than a certain number of dollars had to have digital as well. The same way FM got acceptance, there was a requirement that any radio that cost more than $18 must also have FM in it. And then when FM got to the point where everyone wanted that, the AM stations complained and they inverted it, where every radio that cost more than $18 had to continue to have AM in it.
Ah, capitalism. I mean, am I right, Ben? Because it sounds to me like this is government being put in service of business as opposed to business in service of the people. Because the government is we the people, last I checked.
The government has always been in the service.
Oh, wait, I remember. Yes, yes, yes.
United Fruit.
I remember Silent Calvin Coolidge, who once was seated at a, you know, Silent Cal, seated next to a couple of ladies who at a state dinner, and one of them said, "Mr. President, I have made a bet with my friend Sarah Beth here. She says, I say I can get you to say at least three words. That's what I bet Mary Beth, Sarah Beth. I had a little drink."
He said,
"You lose.
You lose."
Yeah. However, on one of the times when he did wax somewhat more loquacious, Ben, he remarked, "The business of America is business."
Exactly.
And frankly, I think
that got us.
Well, screw it. You know what? I'm ready for a little honesty. I want to take all this "In God We Trust" and "E Pluribus Unum" and "Novus Ordo Seclorum" and all of that crap on the currency. I want to yank it all off. And the business of America is business. Wouldn't that just be a little? It would have to cut our hypocrisy quotient, you know, a little bit.
Oh, we'd find a way to maintain it in the face of that.
Yeah, the business of America is business, praise Jeebus. How about that? Maybe that'll satisfy the wing nuts. But at any rate, we got them stacked up, Ben. Thanks for the
you
science lesson.
Bye-bye.
All right, talk to you later. That's the man who makes all the streaming magic happen. That's Ben Birch. All right, let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Hey, Luke.
Okay. Well, I was going to talk to you tonight about what we didn't see last week. Isn't it amazing how that apparently the night after he gets his hind end handed to him by Joan Walsh, that the big giant head recuts the interview and now runs it out saying that so it looks like he won the talk to her.
Oh, I know. He did. He got his... Joan Walsh just reached over to Bill O'Reilly and said, "Is this ass yours?" And now I don't know. Do you think, because I saw it on the sites that I go to. I saw it at Crooks and Liars or some such, News Hounds. Do you think that does America see what it does to me? Who falls for that?
Well, all the Fox viewers apparently. You know how that goes. And I'm sure that they've convinced themselves, yeah, that's how it went the first time. That other memory, I just was imagining it wrong, you know.
Yeah, these are not the droids you're looking for.
Remember, these are still the same people that if you asked them, I bet you 10 to 1, about 80% of the Fox viewers will still tell you Saddam had something to do with 9/11. You know. These are those brilliant, you know, news people who, they consider themselves quite literate, and it's like, oh, God.
You know, you keep a better eye on things like this than I do by a long shot. Have any of these miserable wingnuts gotten around to referring to Hussein Mousavi and Barack Hussein Obama in the same breath yet? I'm just sort of waiting on that one. I've got the under at 5 days.
Well, I was going to ask. I haven't got to listen to this couple of nights. We've been having a wonderful time down here with having an evening tornado alerts. You know, it gets getting hot, and then at the end of the evening, we have storms come through and tornado alerts. So it's like, well, I can't turn TV and the computer on for a while. So,
yeah, watching for Miss Gulch to go by on her bicycle with the music and the monkeys and stuff. Right.
Well, I was going to ask if you talked to David, if he had told you anything about this.
Sally Goforth?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, because I tell you what, it's interesting. The way they're doing, trying to.
I tell you what. What's the Tennessee state senator's name? I can't remember right now.
Let's see, I had it here.
Black, is that her name?
Yeah, that's it. Diane Black.
Yeah, Diane Black. I tell you what, she sure enough did give Sally Goforth, and you know you can't make these names up.
I know.
She gave her what for? I mean, I'm betting Sally Goforth's butt's still sore. From the spanking she took.
Yeah.
Oh, what a letter! I mean, it was ferocious. It was cruel and uncalled for.
It was sort of like the you know, don't do that again. Okay.
It wasn't even that.
I mean, yeah, but that's what I mean. I mean, that would have been about as bad as you could imagine it was. You know what I mean?
Here's the letter, Luke. This is and just background on this.
There was an email.
There was an email. Sherry Goforth, not Sally. Sherry Goforth sent around an email that is a commemorative keepsake of all the presidents, with all the nice white man presidents, and then the lower right-hand corner is a black space with two great big buggy eyes. You know, the classic minstrelsy reference.
It ain't even that good, you know what I mean?
Right. But after considerable public outcry, Senator Black said that she had issued a strongly worded reprimand to Sherry Goforth.
And the thing is, now, for one thing we ought to say is, this isn't a woman who's like a 22-year-old. This is somebody who's worked for her for like 20 years.
Oh, yeah, she's a professional political hack.
Yeah.
Sherry Goforth is.
Just walking off the street person.
So here's the strongly worded reprimand. You ready for this? Sit down, Luke. This is stunning. This is stunning use of the English language. Dear Sherry, this is a follow-up to confirm our conversation regarding the state email policy. First, as we discussed, email communications are for state use only and should not be used for purposes outside of the guidelines established. Also, as we discussed, no communication that is derogatory regarding any minority should be sent from this office, or that employee will be subject to termination of employment with my office. I know you take this policy seriously, and I'm confident that you'll abide by the policy. Your service to my office and the legislature has been commendable, with the exception of this incident, and I look forward to working together in the future within these guidelines. Sincerely, Senator Black. Just makes you quake in your boots, don't it?
I was going to say, you just want to start shaking. You know, that's one of the things. It's like, oh, but you got to remember, the state I'm in, you've got two U.S. senators, one of them who got elected by race baiting.
That's true. I remember it well. Harold, call me.
Bob. You know, the jungle drums.
Yeah, looking back, I don't think you would have had much. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between Harold Ford and Bob Corker, as it turns out. But it was still loathsome conduct on Corker's part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and well, what it was, of course, Corker didn't get his hands dirty. He had somebody else do it for him. And, of course, he came out and gave one of those kind of criticisms, like that letter about, you know, we think that's really awful and, of course, I'm not going to tell them to quit running it, but, you know, we think that's really awful.
I have no control over who runs ads. I'm powerless.
Just because the Tennessee Republican Committee gives them some money, but that has nothing to do with it. You know, we can't control what people do with money once they get it, unless, of course, it's welfare. Then, of course, we can't complain about what you do with it, you know. So, but, no, it's just that... The thing that gets to me is, it's just it's like the thing with the big giant head. It's like you come out with it the next day, and it's like, and he acts surprised if somebody questions it. You know, here's the thing that got to me that I haven't seen the quote unquote pundits screaming about was the night after Von Blund went up there and shot the guard at the Holocaust Museum. All the Fox News shows, they barely mentioned the story. Bill O. apparently mentioned it just in passing when he was talking about the...
Oh, he mentioned it long enough to say that it was not important.
Well, he was talking about the young man who had been shot at the recruiting center.
Right.
And somebody just happened to mention a line of it, and Bill says, yeah, that's a real, you know, and just went on. Hannity, it was not even mentioned in his show. Unless, you know, I mean, now they might have mentioned it at the top and the bottom of the hour when they had the little news break, but it was not mentioned during Hannity's part of the show. And it's like, and you didn't mention it? You know, the one I think is really interesting, though, is watching this thing with Shepard Smith.
Oh, and he caught living hell for mentioning it.
That's what I was going to say. He just asked, you know.
Well, they make, you know, if I was him, I'd insist that Rupert buy me a whole bunch of new bodyguards because he'd be targeted.
That's one of them things. I'm surprised they haven't had the public flogging of him, just, you know, to prove everybody that they're still, you know, 100% behind the Republican Party. You know, I mean, Shepard Smith dared to mention the fact that, you know, some of these people have been sending these emails, and he's been kind of talking about the fact that, you know, it's kind of scary reading what some of these people are writing. It's like, you dare to say something like that? How dare you mention that these people are just a little off kilter? You know, it's like this thing, you know, where they've been going on and on about the about this, you know, about how they're now lone wolves. Isn't it amazing how the lone wolf that the one that shot the Dr. Tiller,
mm-hmm.
apparently wasn't a member of Operation Rescue. And apparently, they have a whole lot of pictures and film of him. You know, when they were watching the anti-abortion forces. But amazing enough, he was real friendly with all the people from Operation Rescue.
Just wasn't part of the organization.
But, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like every time there's a shooter, amazingly enough, the first thing you see is the guy from the NRA saying he's not a member of our thing. It's like, how long did it take y'all to get on the computer and obliterate his name, you know? It's just amazing how fast they go in there and rewrite history.
Well, but the right wing are masters of the Sergeant Schultz defense.
Well, I know.
I know nothing. I hear nothing.
Even if you had the tapes and the pictures, I still know nothing. Because they were fake. Because I know, because I faked them.
I faked them.
But, and the other one that just came out this last couple of days. Isn't it amazing how during the Bush administration, we were looking at our government, as I say we, as in we of the U.S., we're looking at some people's emails. And amazingly enough, guess who one of the people we're looking at was?
The big dog.
Big dogs. And it's like, say, if they're looking at big dogs, well, it's like they said, I'm just wondering if somebody's ever going to come out and admit that, well, you know, during 2004, we were kind of looking at this fellow named Kerry and this fellow named Edwards. Because you got to wonder where, you know, some of that stuff came out, you know, when the stuff's come out on John Edwards, who's been leaking it. And it's like, well, probably somebody who's been reading his emails.
Exactly. I'm so frustrated and jaded that I would, you know, I got that story in the stack, and okay, can we finally convene the grand? Can we convene the grand jury now?
Remember, these are the same Republicans.
No, because we don't want to play the blame game.
Well, now just remember, now these are the same Republicans, and the guy who did it is you'll remember him in a minute. Remember, these are the same Republicans who, oh, by the way, we tapped into some of the Democrats' computers while we were in charge, just for the fun of it, you know. And we told him not to do that. That was very bad.
Yeah, don't do that anymore. But, you know, we're not going to do anything about it because, well, doggone it, Luke, we've got to look forward and not back.
Well, you know, and it's the thing, probably my final thing here I'll tell you about, is I got to admit I agree 100%, I think, with what Bill Maher said the other day. Said, you know, I still have hope, but I'm looking for a whole lot more audacity.
I love that line. We bought into the audacity of hope, Mr. President. But now we're hoping for some audacity.
And it's one of those things, it's like, you know, I understand you have to play the game and pretend to be a little bipartisan. But you know what? It is like Bill Maher said. It's, you know, it's time to start saying, you know, we got the votes. Let's start pushing some stuff through. And if people don't like it, well, they don't like it. You know, I mean, I'm sorry if your personal poll numbers drop down of your likability, but guess what? You got the best chance anybody's had in a long time.
And I even heard that. I heard that in Washington, D.C., too, Luke. I heard the president of the steelworkers, a guy named Leo Girard, say that if it doesn't happen, and if it doesn't happen this year, it ain't going to happen. And I don't care whether you're talking about health care or employee free choice or the water issues or ending mountaintop removal, because we have roughly 5.5 months left now, if we have that long, before the for-profit media swings into election mode again. Because they haven't really started shoveling the fuel into the boiler yet. But yeah, it's already going. But come January of 2010, oh, God, it's going to be all primary all the time.
And it's like I say, you know, he's got the people behind him right now. And, I mean, I'm sorry if your personal approval numbers go down. But you know what? We need health care. Health care, more, I think, more than anything else, because health care will help the economy. Health care will help the unions because that's one of their biggest problems is our health care costs. And that also helps veterans. That helps, you know, all across the board. And this thing about, well, we can't have a government one. It's like, well, you know what? If we got a base government health care system, guess what? I bet 10 to 1 that once you start running that, these health care companies are going to find a way to get one that's just about the same price. Amazingly enough. You know how it is? Amazing. Well, we figured out some ways to cut some costs now, so we can offer ours at maybe $100 more than what you all are paying for that. It's like, oh, gee, why couldn't you have done this 10 years ago?
Exactly.
You know, it's like one time somebody was talking about the pharma, the drug companies. They said, you know, the amazing thing about drug companies is they spend half their money on advertising.
Oh, sure. That
imagine what happens if they took that and folded it back in to the company.
But you can't do that because it's all got to show up on the quarterly profit and loss sheet, and all the advertising, all the you know, promotional stuff, and the little salesmen with the black boxes who walk through your doctor's office and go in to see the doctor before your appointment, even though your appointment was 45 minutes ago. Those guys are all losses to the company.
I mean, they go in, and I've known a couple of doctors and doctor assistants, and like I say, they virtually just open up the box and you know, drop them out the free samples and all this stuff, and it's like, well, those aren't free. Somebody's had to pay for them. Guess who?
Sure they are. Wait a minute. Well, are those... I'll be damned. I wonder how those two tickets to the Bahamas got stuck in my sample case. Well, why don't you take them, Doc?
Oh, one other thing about the, going back, I'm sorry, to the Joan Walsh thing.
Mm-hmm.
She had the best thing, I think, was when she was on Bill. She said, Bill, what would happen if, say, Keith Olbermann decided to start putting up pictures of gun shop owners and saying these men have blood on their hands? That would be legal. I mean, what would be the difference from what Bill O'Reilly did? I mean, if all of a sudden he started to put up six or seven mug-type shots and say, these people have blood on their hands.
Yeah, but being liberals, I know what we'd do.
I know, but you know what I mean? That's one of those things. It's sort of like, you know, if they argue about it, say, well, what if we did that? Because it's sort of like it's the old left foot argument. Let's turn around and let you understand what it looks like from our side.
Yeah, but like I said, I know what we'd do.
Oh.
We'd get a group of committed activists together, and we'd go to that gun store, and the Christian element would pray for him, and the rest of us would sing and play guitar and maybe some bongos, and we would chant Kumbaya.
Oh, one other thing.
Because I joke, but that's not a wrong response. That is the proper nonviolent response.
But you know, one thing though, one other thing on the media, and I'm sorry to jump around. The next time Boss Limbaugh opens that big fat yap of his and targets somebody who might be a little under 18, I want somebody to stick a microphone in Sarah Palin's face. Okay, now, you know, and let's hear you condemn Boss Limbaugh.
Yeah, for calling Chelsea the White House dog?
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, to this day, I don't think John McCain's ever apologized for that little joke he used to tell there in the 90s. That all the news people know about, but didn't tell us a whole lot about. He used to tell a little story about who Chelsea's parents really were.
Oh, God, I had forgotten that.
You know, and John McCain thought that was a real knee slapper.
Yeah, but then again, he thought it was a real knee slapper when Karl Rove spread it around South Carolina that he had fathered a bastard black child.
I know.
I mean, he must have thought it was a knee slapper because he was seen.
Next thing you saw here, he was hugging George.
Cuddling up with George. Sure thing.
Oh.
Ew. Hey, Luke, I'm going to roll along. But great talking to you, brother. We'll catch you soon. Bye now. From where Tornado Alley ought not be, but now apparently has moved. Nah, there's no such thing as climate change. From East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. And we'll keep things rolling along here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, I got a question. Okay, can you hear me?
I got you good.
Okay. I actually got a couple of questions. And I really don't understand this, so help me out a little bit. I'm going to go back to the cable bit a little bit. Because I know when I think I sent you, because cable was also doing their own little digital conversion, which Ben alluded to. And what I want to know is, now that we got to pay for all these boxes, does that mean they're going to cut out the commercials?
Oh, no.
Okay, so then I've got some other questions then. If that's the case, and you got to pay for advertising on the cable system, doesn't this kind of mean if you're a small business owner, you're kind of SOL?
Actually, realistically, Gene, from an advertising standpoint, if you are just hell-bent on advertising on the TV, if you advertise with your local cable system, that is probably some of your cheapest advertising, as far as TV is concerned. But, no, they ain't giving it away for free.
But, my argument is this. I kind of feel like this is kind of a de facto rate increase because they got to cover the cost of those boxes, right?
Oh, and yeah, it will be quietly reflected in your monthly bill.
So more likely than that, Walmart will put an ad there than say, oh, I don't know, mom and pop, whatever, down on some store corner, whatever. So that's one question I have. Now I've got another question, and you study law, and you know this more about this than I do. But basically, I always figured that. Information works kind of like this. If you want the truth, you got to pay for it, right?
No, there is a lot of truth in that.
Okay, so the question that I have then is, if everybody's got set-top boxes now, does that mean the old FCC rules apply to cable?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I was barking up the wrong tree. I just kind of thought, you know.
No, see, your problem, Gene, is that you are thinking, of the Federal Communications Commission at the same time as you are thinking of rational, or normal, or those really really hateful words. And it doesn't work that way.
Okay. Well, I wondered because you know my caregiver, she's got a, I managed to finagle a set-top box for her, and it didn't work. So she's going to go back to paying for cable, $10 a month. And I thought, gee, you know, you used to go to cable to get, it was sort of a mark of coolness because you could afford to watch all those uncut movies and all that stuff. And if everybody's got to do it, I kind of thought, well, you know, does this mean that you can't watch those uncut movies anymore? but I guess I've been a little more conspiratorial than I should be. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. It is not abnormal behavior because remember, as horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has frequently reminded me, The definition of paranoia is the unreasonable fear that someone is out to get you. Emphasis on the word unreasonable. When we're talking about the cable empires and the increasingly shrunken media world, they are out to get us. They're out to get our money.
I agree. I was just thinking. Because I just kind of looked at this as sort of a feed-in for, something. I've been busy doing stuff here, so that's why I've been watching the Iran thing from afar and a few other things, but I've been trying mostly to catch up on some, I went to a peak oil meeting last night in Portland because the city is setting up a climate change, action plan, and so I'm trying to write these notes up and all that jazz. So it's probably why I'm not really up with it. And I'm sorry, I'm not a good news ninja.
No. You're a great news ninja. Don't put yourself down. Now you did mention we found our way to the FCC. It would be unfair if I did not tell you. And this is being reported at the website of one of your local terrestrial radio stations, KPOJ.
Mm-hmm.
They are reporting via a video from C-SPAN
mm-hmm.
that Julius Genich... I need a pronouncer. Julius Genachowski? Julius Genachowski,
yeah.
Who is the President Obama's nominee to be chairman of the FCC,
mm-hmm.
Said 2 days ago that he does not support reimposing the fairness doctrine. So all the little wing nuts were happy, happy, happy.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I support reimposing the fairness doctrine either, because then they'd shut us down and leave the wing nuts in place.
Yeah, the idea of ever having to balance me with some wingnut just makes me want to lose lunch.
I know. When you read the thing about the leading alternate about the Civil War. Yeah, that's about right. It's like this low grade civil unrest that we're having is getting on my nerves.
Well, it's supposed to. That's part of the definition of terrorism, Gene. You're supposed to shut up and live in fear.
Well, you know, I shouldn't say I never do that, but it gets old after a while. I just can't. I could probably start that way and then get mad again. So, who knows? Anyway, I will let you go because I understand you're kind of packed tonight. So I will let you be, but I just wanted to call in and ask that question because I don't know. I'll abandon my unreasonable fear of somebody's out to get me. I'll try to. Anyway.
All right. Gene, you take care, my friend.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Bye. That's our good buddy, News Ninja Gene, calling in from Hillsboro, Oregon. And let's keep it rolling. I believe this is Linda. Is that Linda?
Hi. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Doing good.
Hey, first I wanted to apologize to you.
Why?
Because when I called you yesterday.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I hadn't heard like the first like 30 minutes of your show because I was still trying to like boot up, and I told you my computer puker was like being, you know, giving me a hard time.
Right.
So I didn't hear the beginning of your show, but then later on you were repeated on what's his name, Mike Malloy's show.
Yeah.
And so I listened again. I didn't listen for the whole thing, but I listened to some of it, and then I heard that call you put on there about the home invasion.
Yes.
And then I felt like an idiot because I thought, oh my God, I called and I was talking about some arbitrary thing about digital conversion boxes, and here you were talking about something really heavy with a home invasion. So I just wanted to apologize.
Oh, no, Linda, no, you owe me no apology. You owe no one an apology. What we try to do here is be as free form as possible. This is all truly caller driven. What you guys, because I come up with stuff that I think might be interesting, but about 99% of the time, what y'all bring to the table is every bit as intriguing as anything that I might have to add. So don't ever don't ever think that because Bob's talking about A that you can't pick up the phone and call and talk about Z.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not that chagrined. I just didn't want your, you know what I mean? Because I felt like I was straying off topic after I listened to that.
Not
like,
at all.
Holy shiite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just, I didn't feel like I was on topic or, you know what I mean? But anyway, you know, that was pretty cool. That guy called about, I have no idea what he said. You know.
I think I can translate.
Yeah, well, you did. You said what they're doing is lowering the bandwidth so that we all have to, like, suffer and pay more or basically be forced into buying, cable or whatever it is. You know, it seems like a plot.
It smells a little bit like one. And also, it's a simple technical function of the fact that they use less power to push their signal now. Okay. So where the, you know, where the analog signal got to you before, since they're putting less power, their power behind the signal now because less power is required by digital, it isn't getting to you now.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm new here. I moved from a very small town to a little bit bigger small town.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to live all over the country. I've traveled all over the country. I mean, I'm not a like a newbie, you know, to the world, you know. But
yeah.
Anyway, I had a son to raise, blah blah blah, and a single parent, you know what I mean. And I moved into an area where I figured he'd be safe, and I made a good decision on that. But the payback is I don't get reception, you know what I mean, things like that.
Yeah.
So at any rate, you know, I am paying for. I already told you I don't know what the correct word is. Succumbed to Rupert Murdoch. And, you know, I'm getting that DirecTV, you know, which I hate. I like some of it, like Colbert and, what's his name, Olberson?
Olbermann, yeah.
Olbermann, yeah.
Rachel Maddow.
Oh, yeah, Rachel Maddow, she's cool.
I just love her to pieces.
And the Jon Stewart show, he's wicked funny.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, I can't take so much news. I mean, I watch the news a lot because... I don't know.
Well, but the thing is, Linda, when you watch what we call here the for-profit media, and we call it that because that is the primary goal. It is not to deliver information to you. It is to deliver you to their advertisers, and it's all for profit, and there just happens to be some sort of news and information wrapped around it.
Yeah, they supplement it, exactly. Well, that's the reason I was boycotting it, because I just, I had it before, you know, when 911 hit.
Yeah,
I had cable TV, and the people cheering for the war kicked me off so bad. That's when I said screw you and cut myself. I don't want your service anymore. You know, take it out. You know, I'm done. And that's when I started going on the internet for my information. I've done that for 7 years. I think almost 7 years.
And you know, you and I are not that far. You and I are not that far apart in terms of how we deal with it, because I watch virtually no television. I am an inveterate college football fan, so I absolutely put my foot down on college football Saturdays in the fall, and I succumbed to my addiction. Beyond that, there's just not a lot out there anymore. And watching, you know, watching CNN or any of the other news channels. Based on the information that I'm able to get from the internet, you know, if I sit down for a few minutes with CNN, I've already read it all already, and the way they present it, and I'm picking on CNN, but other networks as well, it's all so dadgum vacuous. You know what I mean?
I absolutely agree. And you know what? I discovered that when I was like not on, you know, on any kind of cable TV or anything, when And I am an avid reader. I mean, you were talking about reading last night. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, as a little girl, I used to get in trouble because they'd say, go to bed, you know, and I'd be under the covers with my flashlight.
With the flashlight, yeah.
With the flashlight, reading the, remember those,
Hey, you'll ruin your eyes doing that. Yeah.
Nancy Drew, you know, the whole series.
Do you know how blown away I was? I mean, I think I was in my 30s when I found out the same woman wrote Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys.
Oh, and what was that other one, the Hardy Girls, or the, there was another girl series that I...
Oh, the Bobbsey Twins?
That's it! The Bobbsey Twins. I read them all. I had the whole set from some rich neighbor gave it to me.
Same thing happened to me. Kid down the street got a little bit older, so his mother gave me his entire collection of Hardy Boys, some of which went back to, like, 1929. I've got a first edition of, like, the first Hardy Boys novel.
They were awesome, weren't they?
Oh, sure they were.
It was awesome. And I used to get in trouble all the time. You know, I guess I was like third, fourth, fifth grade, something like that. I was just an avid reader, you know?
Yeah. And the funny thing, they were so dated, too. With some of the earlier Hardy Boys and stuff, you know, Frank and Joe left Bay City in their father's coupe.
Yeah.
and they had a roadster as well. And, you know, I'm reading these things in the 70s when I'm, you know, like 73, 74, 75. And I'm thinking, what the hell's a roadster?
Oh, come on. You knew what it was.
No, I didn't, because by that time, Detroit... No, Detroit,
you
I was...
Knew.
No, I was 10. I was 10, and Detroit had quit making convertibles in, like, 1971, and to me, it was a convertible, not a... Yeah, Roadster?
I must have had old neighbors.
Or you knew some people with cool cars.
Oh, man, the neighbors next door to me, the Johnson sisters, they were so sweet. They made the best iced tea, sweet tea, which I had never even had before. I guess that's a really big southern drink, but I'm from the Northeast, you know. So we didn't really have that, but they would make it all the time. And I was just a little girl, you know, and they'd call me over. Come on over, you want to talk? But in their garage, guess they had a car, you know, they bought, I think it was an Impala, like 64 Impala. Every day, they would go out, and they would damp wipe that car down. They never drove it.
Just babied it.
Yeah, they just treated it like it was their child. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, I don't know. Growing up back then was just so different from it is from now, you know, for kids.
I think it is, and I think that's why people of a certain age get kind of lost. I do. It's hard for me to comprehend, Linda, that you know, my son will look at me and go, Dad, you know, you're not funny when you do that. Don't say that. Dad, you can't say that something is the shiznizzle. Please, Dad. It's just embarrassing, Dad.
Hey, I say that stuff just to tick my son off.
There you go. See, he doesn't know that.
Oh, I know. Oh, he does. He thinks it's funny, but he'll tell
No, my boy, he doesn't know. Oh. No. Yeah.
Oh, how old is he?
He's 13.
Oh, geez. Well, see, my youngest is 20.
Oh, okay, so he's doped it out by now.
Oh, yeah, he's just like, my, go away. But you know what? It is funny. When he was a senior in high school, which was only like a year or so ago, he was borrowing all my CDs, you know?
Right.
All my rock and roll CDs, I would go to look for them. Like, where are they? They'd be in his car, and he'd laugh. I'm like, what are you doing with my CDs? Well, it's good music, Mom. So, you know, it comes around.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Ferb, my boy, has a cassette tape that his grandfather gave him of Frankie Lane, if you can imagine. And loves that just about better than any other. Just adores it. And A, because it came from his grandfather, and his grandfather's not here anymore, at least in body. But secondly, because he loves that big old rich baritone bass. Wow, you know, because it just feels...
It's a great classical sound.
And I just like, damn.
Yeah.
The boy likes Frankie Lane.
But, do you only have the one son?
I got one son. I got three daughters and two grandkids.
Oh, all right. Well, grandkids?
Yeah.
Damn, you've been busy.
Well, it's, you know, it's West Virginia. It happens.
Well, I have three sons.
Oh, wow. Now, you've got your own theme music then.
Oh, absolutely.
Na, 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 na.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, if I could figure out how to post a link on your chat room, you know, I would post my son's music space.
Oh, control. Just copy it and hit.
No, it won't work.
Control V.
No, I've done that too. It won't. Oh. I know all that. I'm a computer tech.
Oh, okay. Well,
it just won't work. It's not working. I don't know why. I'm gonna have to look into it more. But anyway, you know, my son was in Iraq. You know, stop loss to Iraq. So he was writing a bunch of music there.
Oh wow.
He's getting ready to I just called him yesterday and I said, well, what's going on with your video? You know, your CD, because he said he was making one. So I was kind of hoping he would do that, because I would like to share his music with some intelligent people like you have on your chat room.
Oh, well, when you do, please do. And we will bust our butts to find some way. You know, you can link it in the forum, too, maybe. That might be easier.
What forum?
You know, our message boards at headonradionetwork.com.
I didn't know you had a message board.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, geez, I've been on here all day, and I didn't even find it.
Just go to headonradionetwork.com, and there's a link that says, you know, forums, or forum.
I must have been distracted by my kitchen moth. At any rate,
oh, you're like me. You're easily distracted. Oh, look, a squirrel.
Yeah, I am. Exactly. I'm totally ADD. Hey, get this one. I wrote a letter to President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm guessing the NSA is following me now. Do you think they would do that?
If they're willing to look at Bill Clinton's emails, I'm pretty sure that they're willing to look at yours.
You think they would? Well, I wasn't nasty, but I was, like, to the point. You know how New Englanders are. You know, we don't, like, make bones. We just say what we're thinking.
Yeah.
Well, I said what I was thinking. I was really ticked off, you know. I think he had given a speech that day about, you know, how great things are. I don't think he actually said how great things are. I don't want to usurp him. But basically, you know, well, we, you know, we're going to get out of Iraq, blah, blah, blah. Well, that day, you know, things are calming down in Iraq. You know how you keep hearing that BS?
Yeah.
Things are calming down in Iraq. Well, that particular day, and unfortunately, I copied everything I wrote to him, but I did not copy the date I wrote this. But I know it was about 3 weeks ago. Anyway, that day it was up that 22 of our military children had been killed that month. So I don't understand what they're talking about how it's winding, quote-unquote, winding down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know. No, that's the thing. It's the torture and the torment of the language, Linda.
Exactly.
There's no such thing as winding down. There's such a thing as we're in Iraq, and there's such a thing as we're getting out of Iraq.
Well, can I read you part of my letter?
You sure can.
All right, well, at the beginning... All right, thank you. At the beginning of my letter, at the very top of my letter, I said, "Dear President Obama and Mrs. Obama, I wanted to send you this reminder of what it means to be a liberal." Well, I know that's kind of like... But you know what I mean? When he... let me qualify that. When he was running for office, you know what I mean? I don't know if he actually said he was a liberal, but he came across as one, and he was posted as, like, the top, top liberal.
Oh, but, yeah, he was, but bear in mind that was done by the right-wing think tanks, and if Benito Mussolini ran for president as a Democrat, they would say, Benito Mussolini is the most liberal member of the United States Senate.
All right, but he did have a lot to say that sounded very liberal. Okay, let me get that.
Okay,
I mean?
Sure.
All right, so anyway, I said, I want to send you this reminder of what it means to be a liberal. In JFK's words, I think you and VP Biden and Senator Bach ass have forgotten your roots. I am your roots. And I pulled it out of htpmembers.coxnet, a proud liberal blog clip, liberal. And it's from JFK.
Oh, I know. The what is it? Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But if by a liberal you mean that someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then under that I said, are you still a quote-unquote liberal? Prosecute the Bush administration. I was so ticked off about hearing that news from the Iraq war, you know.
Well, and it predates you finding the horn, Linda, but I thought I was going to burst blood vessels in my head every time I heard someone from the Obama administration or Obama himself say, we need to look forward and not back.
Okay, because I'm getting to that part. Because I said to him, prosecute the Bush administration, if you balk at it like you are doing now, you are weakened in the eyes of the voters. It is already happening. I'm so pissed off that you are letting it happen. WTF? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Prosecute them all now and stop your juvenile rhetoric about not looking back. Did you really think the American people wouldn't see through that? Oh, please. Give us some credit, no pun intended. Laugh out loud. You better get with it, Mr. Obama. Siding with the corporate hacks is not going over well with the American people, your old supporters. We do see through you. I never thought I'd actually have to say that to you, and it really pains me. Have a great Saturday. Get some rest. Peace. Oh, by the way, 22 of our military slave children are dead in Iraq this month, the most since last September. Looks to me that the lie isn't going so well. How many more will die in the next 24 months for a lie? Get with it. If you keep flipping the bird to the American people and they do think that you are doing that, then forget about 2012. We're already looking for a real progressive, but I'm not a right winger. I'm more blue than you, laugh out loud. Imagine that. Peace.
Atta girl.
Am I bad?
You know, yeah, no, I believe in talking straight. Because so much of what's gone wrong with our political process is that while the right wing is over there using this hateful vitriol, our side is still using the Marquis of Queensberry rules, and, you know, well, we dasn't hit below the belt and wait just a minute while I take my spectacles off. And, you know, you can't fight with a bully like that, Linda. You just can't. you know, you've got to, we've got to understand that if it's left up to them, and they're proving it now, they'll shoot us, stab us, beat us, kill us, stomp us, and sitting there and saying, please don't do this anymore, it just makes them meaner. And that's, you know, whether it's Obama or somebody that's been, you know, just because he's been in office longer, driving me even crazier, Harry Reid.
Oh.
For the love of God, I mean, there's power to be had there, and the fruit is hanging low on the tree, and Harry Reid doesn't even have the what we call the gumption to reach over and pluck it.
You know, I've given him a lot of excuses and leeway, even despite everybody else like jumping on him, and the reason I did that is I thought, well, maybe he's trying to be more, rationed, or maybe he's trying to be more, You know, it's how some people are just slower to the quick. You know, and I've tried to be patient. I'm past patience. I really am. I'm past patience. And you know what? I'm really sick and tired of Obama with this, you know, hey, and I told him that this is my second letter I wrote to him, the one I read to you, but I've got a few others I wrote to him. I was just really hot. And I wrote him a letter about something about, I said, oh, perhaps you didn't get the results of the, of the election. Let me catch you up. We took the House. We made it blue. We took the Senate. We made it blue.
Because certain promises were made to us. Exactly.
And I said, we took the White House. We made it blue, quote unquote, I think.
I know. And from health care to environmental issues to issues in the gay community. It leaves you wondering. You know, my God, I don't know if you caught this or not, Linda, but late last night, the Senate, while nobody was really watching, you know, everybody had passed out in front of the C-SPAN during the quorum call or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They quietly passed a piece of legislation. And I haven't heard a lot about it today, but it's one of those that ought to make us just hop up and down screaming freaking mad. On the efforts of Lindsey Graham and good old Joe Lieberman, the Senate passed by acclamation, okay? They passed this, this Orwellian... Orwellian title of the bill is it's S-1285. It is the Detainee Records Photo Protection Act.
Oh yeah, they don't want to release the files those pictures.
Yeah, well, the Senate passed a bill saying that the president can't.
Yeah, exactly, because there was a news conference on that. I don't, maybe you didn't see it, and they were saying I don't know if I watched it last night or early this morning on what is it, C-SPAN. They were saying that it would be better for the Congress to prohibit releasing the photos. And in other words, what I interpret, in other words, let the president off the hook.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Take the heat off of him from stuff.
Yeah, doing a little water carrying. But exactly. Yeah, it was passed, Linda, by unanimous consent.
They did pass it.
Yeah. But
the Supreme Court hasn't even ruled on it yet.
Don't matter. But it's the unanimous consent part that ought to have our the little hairs on the back of our neck standing on end.
Well, you know what? That was one of my first letters I wrote to Obama in the last month or so, and I was talking about those pictures. Now, my older sister is a corporate person. She's a nice person. She's a liberal, but she said, "Well, I don't think you should release them anyway." And I was really hot, and I said, "You don't understand." So anyway, I wrote Obama a letter, and I said, "You need to release those pictures." And actually, the same day that all this that brouhaha was going on, those pictures were being released on I think it's the Australian Tribune.
No, actually, those were not the same pictures.
They weren't?
No, those are older pictures.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these are worse.
Well, I've heard they're pretty bad, but
no, they're awful, and the American people need to come to grips with them.
Well, you know what? Having had a son in Iraq, you know. I kind of understand the philosophy that, you know, if you release them, you're putting our people in a world of hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Linda, the fact of the matter is, being there is putting our people at profound risk.
I know, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. I do know what you're talking about.
Graded, like bombing everybody. You know?
But here's here's the skinny though. This is going to pass the House like that, okay?
I know. It's like a
the real creepy part of it is, as you alluded to, Lindsey Graham saying that Rahm Emanuel, the White House chief of staff, had made it clear that President Obama wanted the Congress to do this, so he could say, well, I would like to do that. I would like to release the photos, but Congress has said I can't.
But I can't. Well, you know, we all know that's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. But you know what? In my letter, I said to him, I said, okay, fine. You want to be that way. You don't want everybody to know the truth about the photos. You know, even though the ACLU won the lawsuit, you know, to release them. I said, okay, fine. I'll make a deal with you. Release the photos. I mean, I don't know. He's not listening to me, but I just said it anyway. You know, release the photos as soon as our guys get out of there, which is supposed to be what? What did you say in your, you know, they were going to be out in 16 months?
Yeah.
You know, release the photos then.
Yeah, but they ain't going to. They ain't going to be out in 16 months. It's not going to happen. Frustrating, isn't it? Hey, Linda, I gotta roll along, but wonderful talking to you this evening.
Hey, it's wonderful talking to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for making it. Anytime.
Tell people in the chat room not to make fun of me.
Hey, okay. Hey, don't make fun of Linda.
All right.
Later.
Bye.
Bye now. And we keep rolling. Sandra is with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, how's it going?
That's doing. It's going. It's going.
I thought I'd start off with a little bit of football. So, listen up. Seems okay for someone to kill somebody.
Well, you know, if you're Dante Stallworth, I guess it is.
Dante Stallworth. I mean, I just found out that the commissioner suspended him indefinitely. I mean, dude has to do something because Michael Vick, now I don't want PETA coming after me, but
they know where you live.
I know, but those are animals. This fool spent over a year in prison. This dude pay a little money. And he gets to stay in jail for 30 days for killing somebody, drunk. The world's upside down.
A little breathtaking, isn't it?
Oh, it's sickening. It makes me sick.
But you know what? That just highlights the difference. You can't settle with a dog. But if you go to the other side, if you go to the family's lawyer, the 59-year-old man who was slaughtered by Dante Stallworth, and you say, listen, you know, Dante wants to try to make it right. Dante's got $50 million for you if you'll go into court and say you don't want him to, you know, do the jail.
Oh, no, it's just incredible. But, it just epitomizes so much, just that little story. You know, you can always go to sports in America to highlight the bigger picture sometimes in this country. I have to say.
Well, it, you know, even, and though it just grieves me to even mention it, am I the only person on planet Earth who understands that the Letterman quip wasn't about the Palin kid? It was about Alex Rodriguez and the fact that he's a sleazy little horn dog?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And it's just sort of like, hello, can we go back to the fact that dude is hella sleazy? I agree with you. Because I like following sports, you know, I was howling. I'm like, oh, God, not that Alex Rodriguez, he's so slimy, you know?
Well, yeah, because, you know, the whole thrust of the joke is that Alex Rodriguez would get it on with a knotty pine.
Yeah, him and that, who's that other pitcher, that Republican guy?
Oh,
that's keeping denying, you know he did it.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
He's a 15-year-old himself, that freak. Roger Clemens.
Right, yeah. But you know, he's down there, and he's not too awful far from Jerry Lee Lewis territory, and it's in the water.
No, on that tip, that's straight up. I mean, homeboy was 23 when it happened, but he was 23. Can't these people date 18-year-olds and up? What's wrong?
God, I don't want to. Don't make me answer that.
I know. Well, listen, I was really you touched on it a few minutes ago, but yeah, I'm totally blown away by this. We're too delicate to see these photos.
Oh, somebody get me my salts. I believe I'm going to have the vapors.
Oh, no, but it's just, it's so scary because this sort of power that's being vested in the executive branch is just nonstop. I don't care if it's Obama. I don't give a F. This is exactly what I thought was going to happen. The Pandora box was open.
Well, but I alluded to it a couple of times with Linda. The part of that story that just makes me just run around the room screaming naked, it was passed, Sandra, by unanimous consent.
Yeah, well, no, but this...
But you know what that means. Russ Feingold, Tom Harkin, Bernie Sanders. Pick somebody that we call a liberal member of the United States Senate. It was passed by unanimous consent.
It's stunning to me. I don't understand except to say that, you know, we're entering the era of just state power. You know what I mean? You know how I'm always talking about who cares about the two-party system? It's the state capacity that we need to be worried about?
Yeah.
We need to really start worrying. This is a huge story that the media won't touch, and it creeps along until... Well, hey, you know, they're snatching you and I. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm worried
sure they
about.
Are.
I'm like, forget the dumb shit.
And see, that, I mean, we're supposed to be, you know, we're not like the Iranians. Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, no.
We've got their health care system. They've got ours. We refuse to pass laws to keep gay people from getting stomped, kicked, beaten, crucified, and murdered.
Oh, yeah. Because
they do, too.
It'll step on the toes of the established church. We might as well have a guardian council. Hello.
Yeah, why not? Or a committee for the protection of virtue and the elimination of vice.
Yeah, that's what they have running around them countries, scolding people who dare touch each other in public, right?
Right.
They beat you, right?
Yeah, is that an ankle I see?
Yeah. No.
Get the cattle prod.
Yeah, it is really, the whole thing here in this country is, I'm starting to look at Obama like, damn, he's so articulate and smart, he can just make this shit move even quicker than Bush. Sorry to go there, Bob, but I'm thinking.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the Bill Maher comment.
Oh, no, I've been sort of, I'm tutoring some little ones, so I'm sort of in another world. I'm in the world of children, so you do tell.
Well, last Friday night, he laid it out. He said, listen here. He said, it grieves me to say it, but we need Barack Obama to start acting a little bit more like George Bush. George Bush, Iraq War, you name it, Afghanistan, you know, corporate giveaways, what have you. The whole country said, oh, hell no. And he did it anyway. And we need a little bit of that out of Barack Obama.
Well, the thing is, though, is that he, what did they come out with the other day or yesterday was the reform on the financial system.
Mm-hmm.
That's an endless load of BS, too, because they're talking about, oh, you know, the consumers need to have, you know, more regulations. The innovation was going too quickly, so we need to regulate them. No, we need to stop the messed up innovative financial products. That's not even discussed.
Yeah, you mean those highly creative credit default swaps?
And other products that are just, they're totally bogus, and they're not even addressing that. They're not bringing back the, Glass-Steagall. It's a worry what's going on because now I'm really scared that my nightmare is going to come true. Well, we'll be forced, I mean me, because I don't have health care insurance, I'll be forced to buy, by law, some private health care that won't kick in until $10,000, but I'll have to pay.
Well, is there a little bit, let me ask you, is there a little bit of Brer Rabbit in this whole the healthcare thing, insofar as we keep talking about everybody being covered, but by the same token, we're talking about and so we're talking about something where you're going to have to pay for a policy that doesn't kick in till $10,000, that kind of thing, and the insurance companies are putting up this big, great big farce fight. Oh no, we can't. No, don't do that. And they're going to giggle all the way to the bank because all they're going to do is collect premiums and not pay benefits.
Right. No, but this is sort of monopoly capitalism in the extreme is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the government, in total partnership with a predatory industry, looking at 60, 70 million people on cover and salivating, and we're going to have this pragmatic, articulate blackface hand this shit to us, and we're supposed to say that's the change we believe in. Oh, no. My passport is updated, all right? I can't go with this. This is my. This is like dystopia. This is a nightmare, what's going on in my mind. And Chris Hedges, that fool gets more dire every week.
Yeah, and I don't think he's just sitting around taking the downer pills or anything. The sad thing is, Chris Hedges is writing that stuff stone cold sober.
Oh, no. Did you read? I mean, this past week, I mean, it is every week that dude is getting... Because he writes so well, but you stop after reading and think, Jesus Christ, you know what I mean? It ain't pretty.
Well, I had an email exchange with our buddy David from Tennessee earlier today, and we were talking about the fact, you know, the nature of empire, and in the course of the exchange, I said, listen, empires don't get well, okay? Empire is a cancer. Empire in itself, Sandra, is a disease. And it follows a disease course. And once you have crossed over into empire, coming back from it, well, even if you do come back from it and don't utterly collapse, even if you do come back from it, you don't come back the same. You don't come back as well. You know, look at the Western European empires. Look at the Empire of Japan. Look at any empire in the history of the earth. Once you go into that phase, in I'd say 90% of the cases, there's no turning back, and you lose.
Well, no, but see, one thing you have to understand, though, is who is the one losing, though? Not the place that you would, well, I would hope to. No, it's us. We're going to lose because, by the way, the IMF got their $100 billion, didn't they?
They did.
$5 billion.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Okay. Hello? I mean, you know, you can see what's being taken care of, and we got a whole bunch of surplus people on this planet.
I'm sure we'll find something to do with them.
Well, no, that's really sad because I think that's why that really frightening Alex Jones is blowing up, you know, because I think his whole thing is quite suspect, too.
Oh, I've come to the conclusion that Alex is a complete huckster.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but he's, you know, his whole thing is getting bigger by the day because of what's, you know, what's being shown to people.
Well, you know, I guess it was...
That ain't the answer.
No, it's not. Unreasonably terrifying already fairly... Oh, here goes Bob the elitist. Some fairly weak-minded people in the first place is not the answer. That's why, you know, I guess maybe it was Thursday or Friday of last week, I was talking about that edifice in Georgia, the Guidestones.
Mm.
And all this business, because the first thing on the Guidestones, and what it is, you know, they're huge, they're granite, they're massive, can't move them, standing up, you know, sort of like a little miniature 20th century Stonehenge. It's got a little hole that always lets the light from the North Star through, where you can always find the North Star. It's astronomically aligned so that the solstices shine through on, you know, winter and summer, all that stuff. Just like Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
But in 14 different languages, it has a series of little guides, little sentences. And the first one is maintain population below 500 million. Maintain world population below 500 million. And so that the Alex Jones crowd and have gone absolutely bananas saying, oh, see, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, they want to kill off 9/10 of the world's population. Well, it doesn't, you know, dadgummit, Sandra, it doesn't say reduce the population to 500 million. It says maintain it, because you know what? Just left to our own devices, we will reduce the population of the Earth dramatically. And it may not even take nuclear warfare.
Yeah, no, I'm just fearful that with the if we have the failure of Obama, you know, this country has a tendency to go right. They don't go left. You know what I'm saying?
No, we have to be taken left, and that's the thing with Obama. I mean, Roosevelt had to take this country mildly to the left.
And Roosevelt was just saving the capitalists from themselves, thank you very much.
Yeah, he was, and you know, a traitor to your class.
Well, no, it's about them people was dumb, because what Roosevelt saw was the mobilization of a whole bunch of mad-ass people who had a lot more sense in the 30s than what we have now. So them people should be thankful for Roosevelt, because what was coming would have been a bigger shakeup of this system than what we got. You know what I mean?
Oh, it was going to be brutal.
No, it was going to be nasty. And what's happening now, though, I think, is the state is in a good position to maintain the underclass that's expanding. You know.
Well, certainly, and the other difference between the FDR era and today is that you did have an active left leaning socialist base out there.
Yeah, like in Europe, which, you know, is why they developed their social safety net. You know the whole story with
right.
that, of course. And the U.S. didn't, due to, I would say, a lot of it had to do with the racial situation, you know, plus the size of the U.S. I mean, there's so many different factors involved in why our left didn't evolve. But I do think, you know, too many Negroes played into that to everyone's detriment, because
but not just that. We can't pin it on any one group, Sandra, because World War I came along, the Great War, and was a convenient excuse to just slap the fledgling populist or left movement down a rat hole. You know, the whole train of cases, Schenck and Froework and Debs, effectively, and the absolute brutal suppression of the industrial workers of the world, the IWW, the Wobblies, all served to tell an America that had a different vision for what America should be to, you know, sit down and shut up.
Well, oh, yeah, no, I agree with you. I just always think about the whole situation with, you know, 1896, you know, how the South was developing. You know, everything was shut down when I think that the U.S. could have taken a decidedly positive turn had that not all developed, you know.
But as you've noted, you know, you've got that old stodgy Supreme Court in there, sitting there hollering privity of contract.
Yeah, with the Lochner.
The Lochner Court and all of that. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, you want to talk about conspiracies? There's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Oh, no. I know. You don't even need a conspiracy. All you have to do is look at history. That's another thing about the Alex Jones folks. It's like, dude, you know, anybody who knows history, you can see secular. It's just not that conspiratorial. You just have to understand how this country progresses, and you don't have to go towards those fanatics. I don't know.
That's why I made that smart-ass comment earlier about wanting to take all the words off the coinage and just replace it all with the business of America is business.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. It's just not as, black helicoptered out as these people think.
And one of the stories that was in the stack that I just swore I would get to this evening, and knowing that you keep your finger on the pulse beat as much as I do, did you catch this Supreme Court decision that came down today from the rats?
Which one? What is it?
It's out of Alaska. And Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, the rats, with the addition of Swing Justice Kennedy, swing my butt, held that you do not have a constitutional right to have DNA evidence provided in order to prove your innocence.
No, that, I knew, yeah, that, I saw that headline. I was like, you know, I shook my head. I thought, you know what? Wow. So now your ass can be as innocent as anything, too damn.
As a newborn lamb.
Oh, my God. No, that one is scary. Yes, I did see that.
Just to lay out the whole factual scenario, if the state has DNA evidence that would clear you of the crime, and you're already imprisoned.
Yeah.
The rats have declared that you do not have, and this is important, you do not have a constitutional right to evidence that would clear you of the crime, even if you're innocent. Let's all stand up and sing the Internationale.
No, listen, no, I did see that story, and that is, it just goes hand in hand with that late night law that was passed last night. If you think about it, one more power for the state, once you're confined in this country, it becomes far more precarious than it used to be. Let's just say that.
You know, that Chief Justice of ours with the ice blue dead eyes.
Oh, when he fell over, I wish he had stayed over. I'm sorry. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, he writes in this opinion, he wrote the opinion for the court that Kennedy joined, referring to the defendant who has been in prison for 15 years, who is, of course, also... tell me, you don't stick out like a sore thumb when you're a black man in Alaska. Roberts wrote, and this is a quote. This is chilling stuff. I mean, I've read it before, and it just sent chills up and down my spine. Quote: he has no constitutional right to obtain post-conviction access to the state's evidence for DNA testing. Now, dude was not asking for the state to pay for his DNA test. He was just asking them to turn over the evidence so he could pay for the testing himself.
It is absolutely stunning. And it isn't even, you don't even have to be well-versed. This is almost a common sense kind of thing. It's like, wait a minute, sense of fairness. Wait, 1 minute. If there's evidence out there to prove that you shouldn't be locked up forever, everything should be turned over. People should be bending over to accommodate you, right? It shouldn't. They have it the other way around now.
Well, and see, it's an Alaska case, but this is terrifying, Sandra, because I think there's couple of dozen states at least that provide for post-conviction, some form of post-conviction habeas remedy, whereby you can have DNA testing if you're to prove your innocence. You know, the Innocence Project. In Illinois, how many people that were slated for death did that save?
Yeah, and that's because just a crook decided that, oh, no, maybe, he should do a moratorium. I mean, it is unbelievable.
And so what you wind up with is, I mean, it beggars my ability to describe it, because I'm afraid that I'm failing somehow. In America... I mean, there's old, ancient, long precedent, untouched, that says the prosecution has to turn over all the evidence. But now they say that, well, because this was a case, there's a little bit of nuance to it, because the back when the case was tried, the guy's lawyer opted not to have the expanded DNA testing, or maybe the testing didn't exist then.
Right.
And because she was afraid it would hurt her client.
Right. Well, right. I mean, to me, it's just sort of, there's such a huge incarceration system in place in this country already. And these sort of rulings are just, making it even just scarier what's coming down.
You are not getting out.
Well, no, you're not getting out.
And this guy now knows that he's, I don't know what he was sentenced to. I don't see it right here off the bat. He knows now that however long he was sentenced for, he's in there forever, even if he wasn't guilty.
Oh, no, it's just hideous. What about that dude in Georgia? What, I forget his name. They keep postponing his...
execution?
Yeah, the one who is just so...
obviously innocent?
Yes, and I haven't been able to follow it, but the last I heard...
But see, that's the thing. Scalia, the nasty little fascist, Scalia has stood in public and said that the Constitution does not have a guarantee in it that you have a... Very simply, you do not have a constitutional right in this country not to be executed for a crime you didn't commit.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, just let that one drain all the way down.
No, it's too
The hard. State has a right to kill you even if you're innocent.
Right. Well, no, I mean, I've told you before that I'm often sort of amazed that we're still governed by some constitution that was, created in the 18th century anyway, but that's a different phone call. I've got myself in big trouble with that discussion in some of my government classes. You know what I mean? Sacrilege and all. But I'm like, oh, no, shit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, great tune last night, by the way.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was like, I heard that track. I thought, wow. And you know me, I'm forever, I'm so dubious with passing the music along.
Oh, no. Don't. Yeah, don't hide your light under a bushel, Sandra. Oh, yeah, and it was, by the way, I'm being told by Ben Birch, who's in Illinois, it was 13 innocent people who were saved by the Innocence Project.
Oh, okay, yeah. And that was by Ryan, who's now in jail. Right.
Right. But according to the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, they should have died because they had no constitutional right to be proven not guilty.
Well,
which just beats the daylights out of me, because the very fundamental of the idea that you are innocent until proven guilty, okay, you're innocent until proven guilty, but after you've been proven guilty, are we just assuming that juries don't make mistakes? That people don't lie on the stand? I mean, anybody who's a lawyer or has ever had anything to do with the judicial system has got to understand that whenever two sides of a story are told in a courtroom, both people are swearing to tell the truth. One of them's lying.
Listen, and, you know, to harken back to Hedges' article about the ignorance and mediocrity that's rampant in this country, you know, I'm scared of juries at this point.
Hell yeah.
I.e. that decision in Montana for that corporation that just walked away for all the asbestos. What kind of jury was that? You know, I mean, are they being bribed? I mean, what do you need to convict these corporations? These bitches poisoned this whole town for a century. What else? What other evidence do you need?
But what evidence did you... Look what happened to the Exxon Valdez verdict.
Oh, shit, that's like, yeah, no, that one was another one that sort of floored me. Speaking of Valdez, I spent a
Oh, did you really?
The spill, so I know what it looked like before. You know, it's beautiful.
Well, and see, even on a state level, you know, we had that decision here in West Virginia just last week where the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia told a coal company, oh, sure, go ahead, build another toxic coal silo within 300 yards of an elementary school.
Well, no, but...
Who are we to get in your way?
No, but that justice, didn't he get all sorts of money from the coal company?
Well, he had stepped down on that one. Finally, the light went on.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, but yeah, he was put on the bench by Massey CEO Don
right.
Blankenship.
No, I read about that. And I saw. You know what? This is it's just so off the hook. But no, I'm really scared of the Supreme Court. I am just sort of that Roberts was just a disaster. That man, he's horrifying.
And see, that's the thing. Had we gotten McCain, we would have gotten a sixth weirdo. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, what Obama's going to get to do is, at best, if he's got the nerve to do it, hold the line.
Oh, Bob, I got to go. My phone's dying.
Oh, okay. I'll talk to you later, Sandra.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. We're a battery culture. We are. But this, you know, it's justice. What's a liberal justice? You know, is anybody here under the misimpression that Circuit Judge Sotomayor is a liberal? Because disabuse yourself of that in a hurry. The American judicial system exists for the three M's: the morons, the meanness, and the money. In the case of the first two, the judicial system exists to punish the morons and the meanness. In the case of the third M, it exists to protect the money. And those are, in all three of them, are inherently conservative goals. There's no such thing as a liberal Supreme Court justice, okay? So all Barack Obama is going to get to do during these first 4 years of his term, barring the judicious use of lightning bolt by the juvenile delinquent in the sky, and it ain't like I'm wishing he wouldn't, replace Stevens, maybe replace Breyer, maybe replace Ginsburg. If he gets to appoint four Supreme Court justices, it will be the four that are hanging on like grim death to what smattering of personal civil freedoms we still enjoy in this country. Scalia, you know, only the good die young. Scalia is going to live to be 1,000. Roberts is a baby. Roberts is barely in his 50s, as is Alito, if he is 50 yet. They're taken care of like pampered cattle. Rehnquist managed to stay on the court all the way from the Nixon administration to the George W. Bush administration, and he was a flippin' junkie the whole time. And nobody ever said a word. But everybody knew about his little pill problem. All we can do is hold the rope. We ain't gonna haul it in the other direction. But sweet Jesus help us if some right-wing weirdo, one more, that's all it takes, one more. One more. And this country is judicially screwed for 1,000 years. That case, take that case to heart. For the love of Christ, take it to heart. The Supreme Court of the United States, the SCOTUS, said today that no American citizen has the right to evidence that would prove him or her not guilty on appeal. DNA evidence. You do not have the right to the testing. You do not have the right to the testing that would let you out of prison if you're not guilty. Because those strict constructionists say that it isn't in there. There are things that were left out of the Constitution because they were so damned obvious that the framers figured even a moron could figure it out. But they never, those brilliant, skewed, somewhat benighted 18th century men never counted on the degree of bigotry. And they were bigots. And the degree of hate. And they were hateful. And the degree of racism. And they were racists. And the degree of sexism. And they were sexists. They never counted on the degree of racism, hate, bigotry, and sexism, and prejudice that would be brought to bear in the 20th and 21st century by so-called patriotic conservatives. They had no idea. And that leaves us standing more or less where we are. And where we are is terrifying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I called both of them.
Hey, is that Alan?
Yeah.
Not hearing you real good.
Oh, you're not? I had to call back. Still pretty bad, huh?
Yeah, you sound like you're about 8 miles away.
Okay. I can call you right back, though.
Okay, I'll grab the call the minute it rings.
Okay,
stand by. Yeah. I'll stand by, that is. That's our buddy Alan the Trucker. We'll hear from him in just a second or so. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. I saw that Supreme Court case today. And honest to God, the little hair stood up on the back of my neck. It is the very definition of Kafkaesque. You live in a country now where you can be imprisoned regardless of your guilt or innocence, and you have no hope of justice. Don't even think about mercy. Is that you, Alan?
Yes, uh-huh.
Ah, much better, much better.
Good. I was going to say I called local senators today about single-payer health insurance. And I try to be nice, you know, I try to be nice and just tell them what I think is a fact. And I get this feeling that the people in Shelby's office want to argue with me.
Look, they're Alabama Senate staffs, and you do not get that job without being a raging ideologue.
Uh-huh. And I called Sessions' office, Jeff Sessions, and I was talking to the woman, said, I wonder if you folks really know what it's like. To work out here in the workaday world And then before I said that, I said, are you from Mountain Brook? And she said, yes. And you know what Mountain Brook is, don't you?
Oh, sure.
That's like a neighborhood where where you can't find a house for probably under $500,000.
Oh, no, it's a nice place.
Probably the average house is over $1 million. So that's where the staff comes from for our senators, probably.
Yeah, it's not exactly beans and cornbread country.
So I don't think they really understand. And Session says that when I was telling her about single-payer health care, Shelby's office says that Senator Shelby is not for the Democrats' plan because it'll cost too much money. But I don't think there's any Democrats who are pushing the single-payer health care.
Yeah, but see, those Republican staffs will never miss an opportunity to push their weird, twisted little agenda.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, well, yeah, it's a Democrat plan. Where?
Yeah.
Somebody show me the Democratic plan, apart from what was it? Well, at least one point, H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act, that was sponsored by John Conyers and then picked up on by Dennis Kucinich. Somebody show me where there's a Democratic plan that I can get on board with for single payer. I know there's not one in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
You know, Max Baucus.
If there's not one.
Yeah, if one of those raised its head in the Senate, Max Baucus would take it out behind the chicken coop and throttle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told her that there's not one by the Democrats, and you folks ought to it would look good if you bring it up. If the Republicans brought it up, you know they would.
No.
It'd be great if they did.
No, that is so not going to happen.
Being that they're the corporate party. It's looking like the Democrats are the corporate party, too. I'm so sick of the way it's turned out with Obama. And I feel like the movement that got Obama in office should really be working overtime now. Because it sounds like that Obama, the way he's doing his economic plan, is just going to put a majority of Republicans in the House and the Senate next election time, and he just followed right into their trap. If it is a trap, it looks like it probably is. It's a mess.
It's a terrible mess, Alan. It's a terrible mess.
Uh-huh. I want to tell you that I called my insurance company today. I was going to give my credit card number.
Mm-hmm.
Pay my premium.
Right.
And I talked to somebody in the Philippines, believe it or not. I didn't really like to, so I hung up and I called back again. There was somebody in the Philippines again. They told me it's just a random thing. You just might get somebody from the Philippines, you might get somebody from the United States.
Yeah, I ain't buying that. I doubt you are either.
Oh, I'm so sick of it.
Yeah, it's... I'm sorry?
Well, I'll be listening to your show and Mike Malloy's show, and I really like the liberal media, and I think that we on the left who want to fight for the working man ought to really start up now, because it sounds like it's just beginning. It's not the end since the election.
No. I'm convinced now, Alan, that we are going to have to fight harder with Obama than we ever did with Bush.
I know. I kind of wonder if it would have been better if Obama would have lost. Then we would be blaming.
No, I can't get there yet. But because simply because the notion of John McCain breathing out and not breathing in again, and being followed by Godzilla from Wasilla.
Oh yeah.
Just gives me the dribbling. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go.
Because God, you know, Lord knows if David Letterman had said that about the vice president's daughter, you know, he'd have been waterboarded a week ago. You know it's true. Alan, good talking to you, brother.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye. Bye now. So I guess that brings us pretty close to the close of the program. I want to share something with you before we knock off. in days past, and you can still find his archives at whiterosesociety.org. A dear friend of mine ran a show on this network. His name's Dr. Bill O'Brien. And unfortunately, he has a real-world job that just eats up all of his time, so he can't do the show anymore. But my heavens, what a brilliant man. And how I miss him. And I know that he's missed by you as well, because I saw a comment in the chat room last night from a listener saying, you know, I miss Dr. Bill. And Dr. Bill is an educator's educator. He has devoted his life to the education of the Americans, of people, and to the education of himself. And earlier today, almost as if on cue, and I love how these things work, as I said, he was mentioned in the chat room as being missed last night, and then bang, today I get this brilliant email from him. It's an essay. And the title of the essay is The Pea, P-E-A, The Pea, The Shell, My Freedom, and Yours. And since Dr. Bill can't get behind the microphone right now to deliver it to you himself, I will take the liberty of doing it for him. This touches on, I think this touches on everything that we I have talked about for the last couple of nights. The poor will always be with us, Jesus proclaimed. It's not possible, though, Elizabeth Barrett Browning notwithstanding, to count the ways that they can be and are exploited. One of the more despicable ways I'd like to propose is to engage in strategies designed to make the poor go away or appear to by shielding them from sight. We see this all the time when measures are taken to hide the poor from visiting dignitaries, sometimes by blocking off avenues to where they live, other times by creating phony facades to convince the unsuspecting that here everyone is doing well. Some term this the Lake Wobegon effect. In today's debates about everything from health care to utility rates, mortgage rates to credit card rates, there is one truth that's hard to deny. Rates will increase, but only when provision is made to protect those in our society who can't pay. We see it locally in Public Service Commission hearings on proposed electricity rate increases, in debate over hikes in turnpike tolls, telephone and wireless rates, hospital charges, in virtually every situation where a business involved in providing a public service seeks to raise its rates. Make provision for the poor, and you effectively disarm critics who would point to citizens who cannot pay as an argument against rate increases. In health care, today's hottest issue, there is no shortage of examples of provisions that cover the uninsured. No one has ever turned away from emergency rooms. The CHIP program covers most children of the poor. The private sector has come forward with $4 prescriptions on generics to make certain that no one misses needed medications and so forth. In a system driven by private insurance that fewer and fewer can afford, a system that has already helped force two major automakers into bankruptcy, the principal case against universal coverage is that those who can afford services will be forced onto waiting lists with those who can't. In truth, this is all a perverse shell game. See if you can pick the shell that hides the pea. In this case, the pea is the true cost of health care. How can we reform a system when no one can determine true cost? Oh, we know what charges are. We know what reimbursements are. But the hidden P in all of this is true cost, the real value of services to those who can't pay added to the value of services to those who can. Providers of public services, be it health care, electricity, natural gas, heating oil, insurance, all of it, regularly pass on the cost of services for those who can't pay to those who can. Those with insurance pay for those without it. And who wins in this game? Not the poor. If the true cost of services were the amount billed, even with a fair profit added, many of our poor would no longer be poor. Some couldn't pay, for sure, but many who can't pay currently inflated rates could pay fair rates. The real winners here are the providers, those who set the rates. And those who use government to shield them from the wrath of consumers by perpetrating the illusion of fairness. Why? Because there is no ceiling to cost increases so long as we have concern for the poor to justify them, and so long as we make provision so that those who can't pay don't have to. Isn't this in itself a form of socialism? I thought it was Karl Marx who advocated taking from each according to his ability in service to each according to need. We hear all the time that governments that would take from those who have in order to provide for those who don't are socialist, and that a system like this would deprive all of us of our freedom to choose. In fact, our biggest corporations are engaged in exactly this same kind of theft, justified for the very same reasons, to provide for the poor. The real issue here is not fairness. It's not justice. It's not concern for humanity in any form whatsoever. Hear that again. It's not concern for humanity in any form whatsoever. It's power. The desire to preserve, under the guise of freedom, a profit system based on gouging the customer and using the poor to justify it and government to rationalize it. Now, that's freedom, all right, but for whom? The greatest threat to this freedom? A government that would seek to do exactly the same thing, protect the poor under its mission to promote the general welfare. In effect, the private sector continues to claim that it, rather than the government, is best positioned to promote the welfare of the people, provided that its freedom is protected. There is a perverted version of wealth redistribution going on here, but the benefits seem always to flow upward and never downward. And the perpetrators of this theft are the self-proclaimed defenders of freedom rather than the socialist governments they warn us about. In this scenario, Ronald Reagan notwithstanding, the real choice is not between freedom and government. It's between a government that takes seriously its charge to promote the general welfare and a government willing to surrender that responsibility to the private sector. In the first instance, to paraphrase Theodore Roosevelt's New Nationalism, this is not radicalism, it is the shrewdest form of conservatism. In the second, it is freedom for the few devoid of government's protection for the many. It is, as John Locke warned, a form of freedom that has become license. It is dangerous. And it is wrong. You want some brilliant? Dr. Bill's got some brilliant. Thanks, Bill. I'll see if I can't get that posted on the Horn website if you want to get, because you know what? One reading doesn't do it all. That's one of those where simple, seemingly ordinary English words become freighted with complete, fully formed ideas that might take you a little while to get all the way through. God knows they do for me. So I will see if I can get that up at headonradionetwork.com. It's about 2 minutes before the hour. Stick around. Head on over to the Malloy stream. Mike, I think, has his last night before vacation time. God, I hope he's going to go somewhere and get the some hollowed-out coconut with an umbrella in the top and just forget all this misery for a week or so. And him and Kathy help Miss Molly make sandcastles. Because at the end of the day, the sandcastles matter. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. That's where all the streams come from. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, proving once again, every day, that they are the bravest, hardest working people I know. Thanks to all of you who helped keep the horn going. Thank you. Thank you very much for your commitment to continuing this little experiment in a new kind of dialogue. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Yes.
Are you there, Betsy? Okay, so Betsy, so she's got to catch up. Benafsha has to catch up with the marchers. And you've been listening to the comments of Benafsha Madnijad, not the same name, stop it, Benafsha Madnijad on at the University of Texas in Austin, and a massive rally in support of democracy in Iran.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. And good afternoon. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. Ah, yes. Thanks for joining us. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I am looking forward to this show today. Don't know what the heck's the matter with my headphones here lately. I guess I'll get it worked out. Anyway, I don't like to... It's one of those deals where it's all or nothing. You ever have one of those deals? Once again, the entire staff is off today, so We'll go it alone here. Yes, we will. Hey, thanks for joining us on the Guy James Show, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. We are glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And we have a good show lined up for you today. We're going to have, hopefully at the bottom of this hour, we're going to have our Michelle and Al moment from Minnesota, from the Minnesota Independent. You remember Chris was on a couple weeks ago, and we talked about Michelle Bachmann. Of course, there's more news about her, and possibly something coming out of the Supreme Court in Minnesota today. There was a rumor that they might decide today about this whole thing, and we might have a new United States Senator. Hell, we do anyway. I don't know what's wrong with people over this. It just seems strange to me. What's his name? Coleman. His office is up for rent. You know, if he thought he had a chance in hell, he wouldn't have the office. They wouldn't have the office up for rent. He's let the lease expire on it. So, Who knows? A lot of news today, and I won't bore you with a lot of news that you've already seen today, but I've got a bone to pick with the news channels, MSNBC and CNN. I don't watch Fox hardly ever. Once in a while, I run over there for 2 seconds to see if something particular, somebody's warned me about something O'Reilly's going to do or something, or Beck. But really, I stay away from there, and I know most of you do as well. But have you noticed how crazy they get? The national news is getting just about as bad as the locals, and you know how the locals were, and still are. If it bleeds, it leads. Whatever story, you know, the best gore, the best sensationalism, whatever, that's gonna lead. And the national news is getting to be like that as well. And today we had this airplane deal of Continental Airlines, was it? We had a pilot die. God rest his soul. I'm sorry the pilot died. But they went on and on for an hour and a half about it. What are we going to do? How's that plane going to land? And it just went on and on and on. I just thought, you know, come on, let's move on here. Pilot died. We're sorry he died. You know, who's going to land that plane? Well, you know, from the get-go, they should have known that on these long flights, there's a cockpit crew of three. And always, always, at least two of them are certified, and usually three. So that plane was in no more danger than it was at any other time, and yet the national news comes on breathless. Oh. And it would have been fine to come on and say, we have unfortunate news that a pilot died aboard the captain of the Continental Airline coming from Brussels, I believe it was, to Newark. Would have been fine to come on and say that. But oh no. They had to make a big story out of it. Ah. I get tired of them doing that. I really do. I mean, we have Palin and Dave at Letterman for a whole week. We had a comedian making some unkind remarks about another comedian. I'm not going to call her a slut. Well, Dave didn't really call her a slut. He said something about a slutty look, and I agree with him on those shoes. If you saw those shoes, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. But he didn't call her a slut, neither did I. He said that slutty look. I don't know. But there's been a whole week on that. It's like, oh, my God, this is amazing. This is just whoa, what big news is it? It wasn't any kind of news at all, really. And what was it, a couple of 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago almost, the swine flu thing. I was away, and I remember the day I got home, the local news came on in a bulletin and said, flash, news flash, there's been a confirmed case of swine flu in Lee County, Florida. And I thought, oh my God, after all I'd heard about what New York and other places, I thought, you know, I'm dead. I'm dead. The pig flu is going to get me. And now, I don't know, I think that recently they said there's 20, 30 cases here or something. There'd be places, you know, all over the country, and it's not the monstrous killer. And although some people have died from it, as they do other flu epidemics or pandemics or whatever you want to call this. And I'm sorry, but don't pump this out of proportion. They have a way of doing that, and I just get give us more meat in the news, a little bit less of sensationalism. Do you feel that way as well? I know I do. I did want to mention today, what was I?